Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Much and welcome to the broadcast. Peter Werby here with you. Thank you to Richard Hughes for putting that intro together. You'll be hearing more of his work throughout the program and throughout the weeks to come. And if it seems a little quieter in here, it's because Jolene Jordan is off tonight. She's worked 18 shifts in a row doing, we weren't on last week, were we? So it's all rock and roll shifts. And she's got to work tomorrow morning at 8:45. So she's taking the night off. I know. What a wimp. What a win. 3-1, if you're listening, Jolene, you know I'm only kidding. I told you, take it off. She said, I think I can do it. But, yeah, you got to be alert. She's got a five-hour rock shift ahead of her tomorrow morning. So it's good. She should take the night off. 313-298-WRIF. You join me, please, because it's just you and me. And let's see. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. That's our email address for the bashful and for when the lines are filled. They're not filled right now, so if you want to jump in, kind of set the stage for what we might talk about, please feel free. Although, I know you can't believe this, but I've got a lot of stuff on my mind as well. You know, I was wondering, we look back on history and we see these momentous events that occur, and some of them come about slowly, like the Depression of the 1930s or fascism arising in the 1930s. In fact, I was just watching a film called Cradle Will Rock. It's a Tim Robbins film. It's about, on the face of it, doesn't sound real exciting, the Federal Theater Project. That was something that the government financed for about 3 years from, I think it was about I just read the book, how come I don't know the years, but 1935, 1938. And it did all sorts of exciting theater, kind of a DIY thing, do it yourself, but it hired thousands and thousands of out-of-work actors, and they put together the most exciting theater imaginable. And that was way before, you know, people didn't have iPods or even television or anything like that. Even radios weren't that prevalent. So it was an exciting event when a play was performed. And naturally, the powers that be, the conservatives, got all bent out of shape because they said, it's left-wing theater, they're communists, and all of that, right? So, but people knew they were in the depth of a depression, but they didn't really know it in 1929 and 1930. Things got kind of bad, but it took a while for it to sink in. And I wonder if that's what's happening to us now, because there's enough of us that understand this is a recession. And if the things that have happened to some people, like losing your home or losing a job or losing medical insurance or having your retirement fund disappear, well, then it's a depression for you. On the other hand, I was just out. I was just out at Somerset Mall, and that's where all the rich people go to shop. Don't even ask me why I was going there. Oh, you can ask me. I was just looking for a pair of sandals, just a, what the hell do you call those things? I can't remember, but I lost my sandals, so I had to go get a pair.
Birkenstocks.
Not Birkenstocks. Hey, you think I'm a hippie? Okay, don't answer. I can't think. But it's some brand that they're like hiking sandals. You know, they're real. Something like that. Are those Birkenstocks?
No.
Okay. I thought people are coming through the door. I thought they were going to tell me what the sandals were. In any event, maybe that's why I couldn't find them. You know, it's just everything glittering there. Of course, the real big line was for what? It was at the Mac store for the iPhones. Hundreds of people in line to get this nice little, I don't know what. You know, I don't even have a cell phone. So the idea that people pay a couple hundred bucks for something that has GPS on it and all that, I don't understand it. But whatever. So it partly depends on where you're sitting in all of this. And I don't know, I guess it takes really looking at the news to figure out at least what the potential is. Now, this may all just be another recession, depression, you know, hopefully just a recession, and everything will get back on its feet. But it really, to me, has the feel of a house of cards. Now, this is not good, what I'm saying, because a lot of it has to do with public perception of how people act. Like that bank failed out in, what was it, Oregon? Because there was, just like the 1930s, there was a rush by depositors, and no bank can pay off everybody that has his money deposited. So there is also the possibility of like 150 banks going bankrupt as well. How do banks go bankrupt? I mean, how did this all happen so quickly? Is it all George Bush's fault? Well, this war that's draining the economy and just shifting all this money off to one small sector of the economy certainly had a lot to do with it. His unwillingness to finance his war by instead going into debt and driving us into debt sure had a lot to do with this. But this is long-term. This is structural. And is it a house of cards? I mean, house of cards gives the illusion that if you take your build up this structure of cards leaning together, you take out one, the whole thing collapses. I don't know if we're at that point or not, but one can easily get that feeling. One can look at the kind of value of that one has access to. Now, you may not own a house, you may not even own a car, but if you're operating in this world and you're not completely on welfare, you have less and less money, the dollar is worth less, you're paying more and more for gas. What do you mean, you? We, right? I mean, I fill up and I look, is it almost $60? I can't believe this. And this is a form of systematic looting. Remember, I've used that phrase a lot. I mean, because it does not get introduced that much when we're talking about economics. Looting is thought of as something that poor people do when there's a riot. They smash a window and they grab stuff. Well, if you kind of expand the concept, that's what we're being subjected to now. We have wealth, whether it's just $100 in our pocket or we have a $150,000 home that was worth $200,000, of course. If we have an automobile, if we have to shop for groceries and clothing, all of that. Well, that money is winding up somewhere because the rich are getting richer. And the middle class and the working class are getting poorer. Forget about the poor. Excuse me if you're poor and you're listening. But you're usually forgotten about anyway. You're not in anyone's consideration, certainly not the people that make the decisions in this country. Well, you've seen, if you've been watching the news at all, that there's Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. How the hell they wound up with those names? I don't know. But they're the nation's two largest mortgage finance companies. And I'm going to leave it at that as opposed to having to explain exactly what they do. Because finance in this country, or I guess in the whole capitalist system, is so labyrinthine, so complex, so bizarre, that in order to understand it, you have to be, I don't know what, I guess a college professor or an economist. I guess it's a college professor, isn't it? Or somebody involved in finance that knows how to manipulate all of this. The rest of us, we're just kind of sitting here with our thumbs up our nose, hoping that things don't go too badly, that this pathetic 401k that we've been putting money in just doesn't tank completely, that the company we were depending on for retirement doesn't go bankrupt or doesn't somehow or other blow off its retirement fund. But alarmed about the sharply eroding confidence in the nation's two largest mortgage finance companies, the Bush administration is going to ask Congress to approve a new rescue package that would give the government the authority to buy billions of dollars in stock in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and also lend to the companies to meet their short-term funding needs. So that's cool, right? The government's moving in. It doesn't say much for the free market. These conservatives are always yakking about the free market. They only believe in the free market when it comes to our wages, right? They like the market to determine our wages. That's why they're moving out of here, because one of the things that our unions have done, one of the things that our laws have done, and one of the things that the customs of this country has done, is that it's artificially raised the price of labor beyond its market value. Because we sell our labor when we go to work. And the people that own are always trying to drive down costs. And, hey, we're a cost. If they can get us for cheaper, good. If they can't do it here, they'll go to China. So that's the kind of free market they like. They like a very, very, very controlled market when it comes to the kind of profits that they're taking. So they're going to authorize the purchase of billions of dollars in stock in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Now, this is to some extent like the Federal Reserve, because it's a private corporation, but still it's involved the government and all of that. But the deal is that these companies are going to be bailed out with government money. Now, where does the government get its money? Oh, yeah, from those of us who are working. So it's going to take our money and make sure that Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae don't go bankrupt. Because if they went bankrupt, if they collapsed, and they hold something, what is it, $5 trillion worth of mortgages. They either hold or guarantee mortgages valued at more than $5 trillion. Forget it. Everything's gone. Right, we're going to go back to I always talk about thatching our roofs. If we don't stand up to the wealthy, we're all going to be living with thatched roofs if this just collapsed or anything like that. These companies have a credit line of $2.25 billion, and they want to raise it to $800 billion. So is that what they're going to give? Where does this money come from? What are they going to do? Just print it all? Borrow more from Chinese banks? I guess we're running at a deficit. The war costs what? How many tens of billions a month? And what's it going to wind up costing us? $2.1 trillion? You know, these people, with all their arrogance, all their sense of entitlement, I'm talking about the elite, the rich, the ruling class, they are monumental muff-ups, right? Everything they touch gets ruined. Eventually, it doesn't always for them. They always seem to land on their feet. They make more and more money, but it's always the middle class and the working class, and certainly the poor of the world, that wind up to take the brunt of it all. So we're going to, here when it says bailing out these companies, there's what they call a missing referent. Who this is actually referring to. The government's not bailing them out. You and I are bailing them out. So instead of helping Michigan, which has had to cut back services, instead of helping the suburb and that I live in and many of the ones that you live in, help those not have to make more and more personnel cuts, they're going to help Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, these private corporations, and to ensure that the stockholders keep getting a return on their investment. So this is looting. This is Robin Hood in reverse. They are stealing from the poor to give to the rich. Well, I guess that's the way it's been. So we say, well, all right, well, let's not do that. But here's where the other part of sort of the MO, the modus operandi of the whole system. One is looting and the other is blackmail. Because they'll say, well, okay, we won't do it. We'll just let them collapse. And then the whole economic system will collapse. Do you want that? No, sir. Okay, then we got to bail them out, right? Yeah, I guess. Is there anything for me? No. Well, that's the way it's going to go, dear friends. And right now, what should we do? I don't know. One of the things I know that we should involve ourselves in a little bit of Robin Hood economics, the classical way, how come that is that everybody admired Robin Hood in all those movies, that he would rob from the rich and give to the poor, as opposed to the way things have been ever since he ran around Sherwood Forest, whereas the rich rob the poor and give to themselves. Like here, David H. Koch, the richest man in New York City with a net worth of $17 billion, is donating $100 million towards the renovation of the New York State Theater at Lincoln Center. The City Opera and the New York City Ballet perform in the space, and Koch told the New York Times, I've been going to the New York State Theater for 40 years. I can assure you I would not make a gift of this magnitude unless I was absolutely convinced that the quality of the work was world class. Now, guess what the name of the new Lincoln Center Theater is going to be? Yeah, you got it. The David H. Koch Lincoln Center for the Performing Arts. And you say, well, so what? Look, the guy's doing something good with his money, isn't he? He's generous. He's extraordinarily generous. $100 million. I mean, that's the budget of some cities, right? I mean, is that really generous? I mean, $100 million is what percentage of $17 billion? He shows you my math. What? A billion is 1,000 million? Is that right? I think so, yeah. So what percent? I can't even do the math in my head, certainly. I don't even know if I could do it with a piece of paper. But 100 million is a pretty low percentage of 17 billion. Why in the world do we have an economic structure that allows someone to accrue that kind of money? Because I'll tell you, if there was a tax system doing what it was supposed to, this man would wind up probably with a paltry 250 million. Right? This is the commie coming out of me. I want to take all of this man's money away except for $250 million. Then the state of New York would have enough money to renovate Lincoln Center with $100 million, because they would have that plus lots more from David Koch, who essentially, how did he make this money? I mean, you know, it's his money. I know. How dare you say that? It's his money. What do you mean? How does the his get in there? How does one, in a social sense, possess it? I mean, how does that become his individual wealth? I mean, people produce that wealth. Wealth doesn't just appear. I mean, some of it is just all the speculation capital, and it accrues by just numbers. But great portions of it come from the form of looting, where labor is paid much, 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 much less than it actually produces. So what a progressive tax system is supposed to do is, you love this word, redistribute wealth among the, make it a commonwealth. Like you hear the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, because everyone knows that it takes a village, even though, you know, corny title by Senator Clinton for her book. And everybody is involved in it, from the great masterminds like David A. Koch. It turns out, of course, these guys usually aren't quite as smart. They're just very, very aggressive and often very lucky, down to the janitor. I mean, who would you rather live in a society with without David A. Koch's, the billionaires and the millionaires, or without the janitors of the world? I mean, I would say that the janitors are much more important. This stuff could operate very easily with people that were making a lot, lot less, or a committee of the people that actually did the work. That's what I think. See, world now has 10 million millionaires. Their wealth adds up to 41 trillion. So there's enough among 10 million people in the world of 6 billion people to take care of all the economic problems of the world. But greed, and essentially insane greed, because why would 10 million people need $41 trillion? What do they do with it? They don't do anything with it. They don't spend it. You can't spend $41 trillion. But Rush Limbaugh now making $400 million. And people like Leona Hemsley, who was this nasty, nasty lady who owned these hotels in New York. How in the world she came up with an estate of $8 billion is way beyond me. But she left it for the care and welfare of dogs. And you say, oh, that's nice. How can you be mean to her? All the little doggies that need help. Think about all the strays and homeless doggies. Isn't that nice? Don't you want? Well, what happens is they, that section of the wealth isn't taxed. So the $8 billion that Hemsley gave to the doggies should have had an estate tax, or it does, of 45%. So her $8 billion donation for dogs is really a gift of $4.4 billion from her and $3.6 billion from you and me, according to an article in the New York Times called Dog Eat Your Taxes. So, I don't know. What am I doing? I'm complaining. 313-298-WRIF. Peter Werby here with you on the Night Call Show. Jillian Jordan off for the evening. And what solutions do I have? Man, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, these people, the brainiacs running this system, have screwed it up so badly, have put us in such jeopardy environmentally, militarily, socially, and economically. I mean, I'm hoping that there's somebody that can figure out how to get us out of this. I can't. I don't know. I don't have any great ideas. It used to be, let me see, let me do some math here. I mean, almost 70 years ago, it sort of ended 70 years ago. People would say, socialism, that'll do it. But things have gotten to the point where it may be even beyond that. And so I know you're always, you know, supposed to have the audacity of hope and all that. And I don't know, maybe it's my mood, maybe I don't have Jolene's smiling face here, but what the rulers have done is they have engineered a passive mass of the ruled, you know, you and me. So we're not used to thinking for ourselves. We're hoping that the people in power don't screw up real badly. We're hoping that the people in power don't screw us real badly. But the idea that we are a strong, united, powerful people, power to the people, remember that? Ever hear that? It just doesn't seem to be on the agenda. I mean, people, there was an upflare of that in the 1960s. I mean, that's why John Lennon wrote that song, Power to the People, and that was a song. And the idea was that people were revolting against the elite, that not only did these people use their money in a way that didn't benefit everyone, but it only benefited a small amount, but even back then, they knew that they screwed up everything, the elite, the rulers. That they're almost inherently incapable. I mean, I suppose that's the case. I mean, once you have people that have that thirst for power, that desire to have power over events and other people, that you're starting to deal with people whose brains are not in the right place. I mean, I think that's true. If you're not thinking about the results of your actions on everyone, rather than a real narrow set of interests, you generally tend to screw things up. And you wind up with Nixons and Bushes and even Reagan. You know, think about Reagan, but, you know, a lot of all our problems started there. And none of these guys were particularly, I'm doing them a real service by saying not too bright. They, when Rome collapsed, the democracy, immediately you got Caesar, when it became the empire, but then you went into, the Neros and the Caligulas. But man, we're going right straight to the Caligulas, aren't we? That's my good news. Here, I want to talk about this little event, anyway. So if you want to call 313-298-WRIF, maybe you have some idea. And maybe I'm overmodulating. I was just looking at my, my little, we used to be gauges. Now they're bars. That's what they call bars. It's up into the red. So I'm sorry. I hope I wasn't vibrating your speakers or anything like that. But 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Where is this? Okay, here's Maurice in Detroit. Maurice, hi. It's Peter without Jalene. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Two things I'd like to comment on. I read in the paper the other day, Flint passed the ordinance to get caught with your pants down below your butt, $500 fine.
That's
we
right.
We ought to bring it to Detroit, make it $1,000 fine, knowing they cannot pay it, to put them a work program they can clean up the sec, to clean up the city. Secondly,
let's stay on the sagging. What's wrong with guys? I mean, it looks a little goofy to me, but hey, you know, you get older, you don't understand young people's fashions.
You know, the guy told me, old dude told me, and told me when he was in prison, guys wore they pants like that when he got the butt blowed out. Okay.
You know, I miss that.
They don't know. I mean, talk about when guys got, you know, gays, but they got their butts blowed out. They wear their pants down. They would wear their pants down to the,
wherever.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure still what you said. I'm not even sure I want to, but let's leave it at that. Here's the story. Flint police cracked down on saggy pants. Police Chief David Dix, that's right, David Dix, now have to watch their butts, because Dix, who took over the department last month on an interim basis, announced that his officers would start arresting people wearing saggy pants that expose skivvies, boxer shorts, or bare bottoms. For people that are listening on the internet across the country or even somewhere else in the world, Flint is this city that has no police problems or crime at all. So then this allows the police to fasten on things like, no, I'm kidding. It's kind of like the third highest crime rate in the country. Dix told the Detroit Free Press this week, some people call it a fad, but I believe it's a national nuisance. Why does this happen all the time? It is indecent, and thus it is indecent exposure. How can he declare it to be indecent? This immoral self-expression goes beyond freedom of expression. You can get 93 days to a year in jail or fines up to $500. No one had been arrested for saggy pants. I don't understand that. I mean, maybe you would find that a little offensive to see the crack in somebody's butt, but you have to start arresting plumbers, right? You ever see those guys when they, you know, they bend over to your sink or toilet or something like that? Let's see. Here's some people said, Montez Pfeiffer says, if I pay for my pants, I should be able to wear them how I want to. Everybody thinks it's gangsta, but it's a fashion, nothing more. Well, no one... But on the other hand, Sonika Nichols said the sagging is out of control. It went from a style to a disruption. The chief has a good idea. I'm not saying people should go to jail, but maybe they should do community service for wearing their pants low. You know, I'm always talking about Greg Palast's book, Armed Madhouse, and usually it has to do with the combination of the two. But sometimes it's just a madhouse, isn't it? 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Here's Mark in Roseville. Mark, hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hey, Mr. Werby.
Hi.
Hi.
Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, okay. You clicked
here
off.
Here I am.
Go ahead, man. You're on the air.
How's it going?
Going terrific.
Man, I have been such a fan of yours for a long time.
Well, thank you.
It's like I have a call on the other line.
Well, do you want
to... You understand that, right?
Yeah, but I'm not going to understand it if you take it.
But I'm not going to leave you because it took me 25 minutes to get through to you, bro.
Okay, well, go ahead. You're on the air, Mark.
Yes. So are we on the air to, like, all my brothers in Iraq?
Some of them may be listening on the Internet, yeah.
Yes, my brothers. You rule. Keep on your toes. Keep your head in the game. Mr. Werby.
Were you over there, Mark?
Huh?
Were you in Iraq?
No, sir. I was born in 63, and I'm protecting our own homeland right here while our brothers are over there taking care of business.
Well, that's good. Yeah,
is that a good thing? Just like yourself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. Got to take
like
care.
Just like yourself. Yeah. I have that mad book to where the vice president shot that one guy.
Yeah.
With that bird shot.
Right.
What up with that?
Don't mess with Dick Cheney.
Don't mess with Dick Cheney. Dude, if that was you or me, we'd have been arrested, prosecuted, and thrown in jail. What?
What's happening with the music in back? Is that played specifically as sort of a background for our conversation or just incidental?
Well, it's just a movie I'm watching.
Oh, okay.
You ever see The Devil's Rejects?
I missed that one.
Oh, okay. It's from Rob Zombie.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll tell you what, Mark. Sounds like you got a lot going. You got a movie on. You got a call on the other line. You get it. It was very nice talking with you. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Here's Gene in Atlanta, Georgia, the home of my friend Mike Malloy. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hey, Peter. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a Detroit native and really connected with the whole automotive industry and the economy in general. I want to acknowledge your gravity for basically saying what a lot of people are thinking, in my opinion. I totally believe that if Americans just kind of joined together and had an uprising, had a revolution, you know, I mean, it's been done before. More recently in modern society, I think we've just become very complacent and passive and obsequious to the corporations and government. So I just wanted to acknowledge that for having the courage to...
Well, I appreciate that, and you're right, but it's been engineered, and what I always say is that the forms of it... of resistance, the forms of struggle that once existed just aren't here anymore. And it doesn't matter to some extent. I don't mean completely, but to some extent it doesn't matter that millions of us object to the way things are going. What is it, like 82% of us think we're, on the highway to hell. But we don't have the social forms through which we can say no to this. I mean, people invent them as they go along. The 1930s, our grandfathers and great-grandfathers put together the union movement. The 60s, you know, African-Americans and women and hippies and anti-war protesters figured it all out. In other countries, in South Africa and in Belarus and places like that, the Philippines, people figured out how to have forms of mass struggle and to bring the elite that was, you know, creating such disharmony and misery and exploitation in the country to heal. So we haven't figured that out yet. And it's not, and one person can't do it. If someone would say to me, all right, what are we going to do? I don't know what we're going to do, but we got to figure out what's wrong, and we got to figure out what we want. And from there, you know, hopefully we can move into a positive direction. Because someone says, you know, I was looking at this blog where people were talking about it. Someone was saying, Werby's always negative. He's always negative. Well, I would like to be very positive, and I would like to find some elements that suggest a positivity, if that's a word, that gives us a vision and gives us a manner in which we can we move forward towards that vision. All right. Hey, thanks for calling in from so far away. I've got to take a break, and we will be right back.
I think motivation is overrated. The people who are motivated are the ones who are causing all the trouble. If you ask me, this country needs less motivation.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit.
The Landing Strip is back and under new management. Free prime Angus ribeye steak dinner. That's right. You'll be needing those 275 domestic or import beers or 375 drinks, including top shelf like Grey Goose, Jack Daniels, or Patron, to wash down thick slabs of juicy ribeye steak for free every day from 11 to close, all day and all night. We're talking a full dinner with baked potato, vegetable, and dinner roll, just like a five-star restaurant. Get ready for fresh faces as the Landing Strip brings in all the hottest showgirls from our 11 other clubs all month long. And coming soon, gear up for the Las Vegas style buffet for free. 275 beers, import or domestic, and 375 drinks, including top shelf like Grey Goose, Jack Daniels, or even Patron. Plus, get full prime Angus ribeye dinners for free. Your nightlife is cleared for takeoff at the Landing Strip, just minutes west of Detroit Metro.
Better training, better standards, better business. That's what the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, IBEW Local 58, and the National Electrical Contractors Association, NECA signatory employers, bring to each and every job. Through their state-of-the-art electrical industry training center in Warren, IBEW Local 58 and NECA signatory employers invest their own resources in training to ensure they deliver the most experienced and qualified workforce possible. They have a long history of commitment to being the best. More than 1,000 hours in the classroom and 8,000 on the job means better quality workers and better results for Michigan business. This team is experienced and constantly updating their training to remain leaders in the field. Contact IBEW Local 58 or a NECA signatory employer today for your next project. IBEW Local 58 and the Southeastern Michigan Chapter NECA signatory employers. Better training, better standards, better business, and partners in powering Michigan's future.
Jeep is protecting you from high gas prices. The Jeep 299 Gas Guarantee Plus is ending soon. Right now, when you buy or lease most Jeep vehicles, you'll pay just $2.99 a gallon for gas in each of the next 3 years for up to the first 12,000 miles per year. Plus, get up to $2,000 bonus cash allowance on Grand Cherokee and Commander. And we're backing it all with our best-in-the-business lifetime powertrain warranty with no deductible and unlimited mileage. So hurry to your Jeep dealer today for the $2.99 Gas Guarantee Plus before it's gone. See dealer for a copy of this limited warranty and details. Non-transferable, not available on SRT models, diesel, and certain fleet vehicles. Available miles per year based on a maximum number of gallons, which varies depending on model. Visa, MasterCard, credit card required. 87 octane gas only. Allow at least 6 weeks for activation. Excludes all other offers. Go to LetsRefuelAmerica.com or call 1-800-866-4656 for details. Offers end July 31st. Jeep is a registered trademark of Chrysler LLC.
These days, people aren't used to getting a lot for their dollar. It just seems like you get less and pay more for everything. Well, at Hungry Howie's, we're changing all that with our Summer Sensation Combos.
It's mayhem in the deer.
Your concert station, 101 WRIF, has your ticket for mayhem at DTE. As Rockstar Energy Drink presents Mayhem Festival. Saturday, August 9th at DTE Energy Music Theater. Featuring Slash.
same day, same stage. Along with Dragon Force,
Mastodon,
Under Oath,
Machine Head,
Walls of Jericho,
Black Tie,
Suicide Silence,
The Red Cord,
Five Finger Death Punch,
36 Crazy Fists,
and Airborne. Tickets on sale right now
at all Ticketmaster outlets or Ticketmaster.com.
But keep your radio locked to the rim, because
nobody
gives you more free tickets to Mayhem Festival, interviews with a band, and more like your concert station. 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.
When you have over 100 beers on hand, a fantastic menu, and are considered the favorite neighborhood pub, what more could you ask for? How about another location? Since 1983, Ashley's has been a part of downtown Ann Arbor and its charm. Their tradition has been to celebrate the simple pleasures of life. Good food, good drink, and good friends. Now, all the best of Ashley's has been made available in their newest location in Westland, right in front of the Westland Mall. For years, Ashley's has traversed the continents, bringing you a world-class selection of beer and ale, from the hoppy British bitters to the dark lagers of South Germany, from the classic pilsners of Bohemia to the arcane fruit beers of the Flatlands, from the craft microbrews of the U.S. Pacific Northwest to the finest Michigan microbrews. At Ashley's, there's always something new to try and explore. They're proud to continue that tradition at their brand new Westland location in front of the Westland Mall. Experience their award-winning beer selection, complemented by their delicious menu items made to order from the freshest ingredients available. Stop by and visit Ashley's of Westland today, just in front of the Westland Mall, or log on to ashleys.com.
The party always starts at the Barnstormer in Whitmore Lake, where beer is way cheaper than gas. Get 25-cent drafts with your purchase of dinner Tuesdays through Thursdays. Every Wednesday, high-performance Fast and Furious cars meet American Graffiti Classics, sponsored by Deptula Racing. Drag on down to the Barnstormer for winter sausage coney specials, drink specials, and the chance to win a dyno test.
Harman Kardon Infotainment brings the sound.
Enter the Barnstormer's karaoke contest with a $50 weekly cash prize, as well as a chance to perform at the Fowlerville Fair. Thursdays, get high on the hog at the Barnstormer's Bike Night. Enjoy blues, jazz, and classic rock under the stars. There's food and drink specials all evening, and bikers walk right in free. Friday and Saturday, rock out with live bands or dance to the awesome sounds of DJ Woody and host Chega Man. The Barnstormer, located on M36, just west of US 23 in Whitmore Lake. For more info, call 734-449-0040 or log on barnstormerbanquet.com.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
We are free at last.
Welcome back. Thank you very much. Got to turn my mic on before I get heard, right? Jillian Jordan off for the night. 18 consecutive days on the air. It was just too much for her. She got to be up at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning, too. As well, rather. Bleachers start to tumble at Tiger Stadium. This doesn't have much to do with what we usually talk about, but it's a sad day. My father took me to Tiger Stadium. His father, my grandfather, took him there, and now they're just ripping it down. Okay, enough of that. All this election stuff, man. It's interesting that not very many of you comment on that. It's okay with me, to tell you the truth. And it just gets more and more. Let me just talk about the media a little in all of this, because the media has a real vested interest in making sure you do what? Watch or listen. Primarily watch, right? So if they just dealt with what's important, and what's important, policy questions, how is John McShane, the third Bush term, or Barack Obama going to rule once they achieve the White House? So instead, what they got to do is Obama's daughter, and what are some of the other things that are going on? Oh, yeah, Jesse Jackson, and what's that guy, Bernie Mac? Bernie Mac made an off-color joke. And so, I mean, that's like the lead story somewhere. I mean, who cares about all of this? And it's created as a manner in which you will keep watching. Well, to me, I want to do my damnedest to make sure that they don't lure me in for their needs, because that's why they're broadcasting. They're broadcasting for your needs. They're not trying to inform you. It doesn't matter what Freddie Mac said. It doesn't even matter what Jesse Jackson says. Now, how in the world, for instance, does Jesse Jackson arise to the position of prominence that he does? He is projected there by the mainstream media. Oh, yeah, there's an issue about African Americans. Let's see what Jesse Jackson has to say. That's not his fault. And he has a real penchant for, you know, saying wrong things, a lot of hypocrisy. He's also done and said a lot of really good things. I would say probably about, 10 to 1. But when you're in the public eye and you got 10% of what you do not coming off so good, it's not so good. So why is he being projected as a spokesperson for African Americans like they're this undifferentiated mass? Because they refer to Jesse Jackson as what? What is Jesse Jackson? He's a black leader. What? Well, who are the white leaders? We don't have white leaders. Or if we do, we have different ones, right? We have conservative Caucasians and liberal ones and radical ones and, independents and all of that. But no one refers to them as white leaders. And Jesse Jackson is not a black leader. And Al Sharpton is not a black leader. He's not even a spokesperson. Neither of them are spokespeople for African Americans. If someone kept coming to me, and I'm not faulting them, if someone kept coming to me every time there was an issue about the economy, every time there was an issue about the war, and they said, hey, go ask Werby what he thinks. Man, I'd be right there saying, oh, here's what I think. I think George Bush is rah, 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 right? Well, they do the same thing. Does it advance their career or advance their personal interests? Sure. But I don't know that we even want to get into their motivation. That doesn't seem to me to be what's relevant here. It's a creation. It's a creation by the media. And which is the main reason, particularly television, that I don't watch at all. It is not helpful in understanding what is going on. In fact, it is filled with diversions from trying to understand what's going on. Oh, yeah, how about this? Pet owners prefer McCain over Obama. I mean, how can this be? How can Randolph E. Schmidt, an Associated Press writer, even consider himself a journalist? Probably because he was assigned, so we shouldn't get up on him too badly. I'm not even looking. Janet Taylor, Plymouth, Massachusetts, says, I think a person who owns a pet is a more compassionate person, caring, giving, trustworthy. I like pet owners. Well, who the hell is she backing? I don't know. Doesn't say. But you know what I'm talking about? And also that then who becomes the top elected official in this country becomes the most important event of all. It's very important because the person that does this is going to decide on the course of events in many aspects of our life. That's very, very important. But there's a lot of other real important things that don't get paid any attention to because they're not very interesting. And they're not very interesting if a suburb is laying off personnel. It's not very interesting if schools have in our suburbs have 35 kids in it. That'll get reported on a little, but it's not really as interesting as Bernie Mac. Did I call him Freddie Mac? No, I hope I didn't. Bernie Mac telling an off-color joke or this insane statement of Jesse Jackson's. Comedian Bernie Mac endured some heckling and a campaign rebuke. Oh, man. I mean, that was like at the top of Yahoo's stories. And some of the ads. That's another thing. If you don't watch television, you don't have to be subjected to these horrible ads. For one thing, there is no way to verify what is said in them. So what it's trying to do is manipulate your emotions, both all sides. And I think the Republicans worse, but certainly it's not like the Democrats are hiring people that are just going to yak on about policy and about political agendas and political positions and all of that. But this one that's been airing in Michigan and a bunch of other states where it says they show images of student protesters marching. I don't know if you saw that this hippie with an open vest and no shirt kissing a woman at Woodstock. And then it shows images of the war in Vietnam seen through the eyes of John McShane. And that's really horrible. I mean, I don't know what they're trying to say. I mean, for one thing, they're trying to bash, millions of people that lived through the 1960s as young people, and make this dichotomy, this big distinction. But as we know from reading, or if you're older and you lived through it, that the grunts on the ground, not the flyboys, not the guys that bombed and killed millions of civilians from their B-52s, flying from Okinawa, dropping their bombs and never even seeing their targets, but rather the guys on the ground, they were as much involved in the youth culture of that time as people here in Detroit or wherever else you're listening. I mean, they couldn't, they were getting shot at. They weren't dancing to the MC5 at the Grandy Ballroom. So it's all a diversion, and it's all its purpose is to keep you watching. To make this as exciting as the Olympics or the exciting of the NBA playoffs or the NFL playoffs, because they live and die by their ratings. So my advice is deal in the cruelest blow of all. Turn it off. Go outside. Just breathe some fresh air or read a book. Read a book. I'm not going to go on about that. I actually got a book to tell you about. But here, what's really going on, this doesn't get much play. You may have seen this. John McShane said that he will balance the federal budget by the end of his first term by curbing wasteful spending and overhauling entitlement programs, including Social Security. You know what that means? How old are you? No? Oh, you're only 17? Well, I don't have to worry about Social Security. That's 48 years or something like that. It's almost half a century away. How old are your parents? They're expecting something, or if you're of retirement age. Well, if you're retirement age, I'm sure they're going to literally grandfather everybody in who's getting what they're getting right now. But essentially, in an economy, wealthiest economy in the world, that has so screwed itself up by the leadership that's been there for 30 years or so, and this is what we're finally seeing the results of it all, where are they going to take this from? They're not going to take it from, what's that guy, David Koch, who has $17 billion and wants to have Lincoln Center named after him, Lincoln Center Theater. They're going to take it from your grandparents, from your parents, and from you. So you're going to work your butt off all your life, and they're going to give you less money. Because guys like Bush and Cheney and the rest of them have screwed everything up economically. They created a war at the same time they're giving tax breaks to their rich buddies. And they're going to wind up with a bill for the war for over $2 trillion, which if you're 17, you're going to be paying for all your life. And you're going to be lucky if your grandkids aren't still paying for it. So when John McCain says, and this is right from his website. In the long term, the only way to keep the budget balanced is successful reform of the large spending pressures in Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Understand what that's all about? They're going to cut back on programs that help everyone. Everyone that's not rich, like David Koch. Everyone that doesn't have the ability to buy a hospital like he does and still have tens of billions of dollars left over. So we're talking about John McShane. In fact, Bush gave up on this. Bush gave up on trying to destroy Social Security and turn it into a private investment fund where all his buddies on Wall Street would make a fortune, and who knows which way this would all go. I like that, they somehow use this phrase like it's there's something wrong with entitlement. I mean, we live in this country. We work our butts off, the vast majority of us, and we expect to have economic security, not to be whipped around by the manipulation of the market, of politics, of greed and looting. Please, hey? And if we got to say please, we're in real trouble. We got to say, you ain't doing this to us. And here's the reason why. And here's when we say you're not doing it. Here's why you're not doing it. We haven't gotten to that point yet. Let's work for it. Peter Werby here with you. Jalene Jordan not on tonight. 313-298-WRIF and 313-298-9743. Let's go to Darren in East Point. Darren, thanks for being so patient. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. How's it going?
Going good. Thanks for calling.
Good, good. Yeah, I was just listening to you about this whole, working class just working our butts off, working our hands to the bone. You know, as a lowly meat clerk, I don't see my tax dollars going to anything but the war and tax cuts for the rich.
That's it. That's
you know, and that's what it all boils down to. And, you know, you look at these other countries, they got free medical care, free college. And, you know, where the heck is that for us?
Well, we're the richest country in the world. Why don't we have it?
And we are the richest country in the world. Our country, you know, possesses the majority of the 1% of the world's population that owns 51% of the world's wealth.
No. And, I don't know. They just keep selling off things. They just sold off. Are you ready for? I mean, I don't know if you saw this the other day, but the Chrysler building in New York City just got sold to this Dubai investment firm, and Budweiser, it just got sold for some $1 billion to some, I think, Dutch company.
InBev,
right?
InBev is what it's called.
Yeah. You're on top of it.
Yeah, and they say they're not gonna change any of the jobs, not going to cut back anything or change the rest. I highly doubt that, because if they do, you know, keep the jobs in that brewery in Missouri, you know, they're not going to make any money off of it, and that's what they're out to do.
Sure.
You know, and that's what it all boils down to, really.
That is, and I'll tell you another thing, Darren. You said you're, what'd you say, a meat clerk or a meat...
Huh? I'm a meat clerk, yes.
Yeah, well, if you're lucky, you belong to the UFCW. Huh? No?
Oh, yeah. I was a member of that union.
Mm-hmm.
But, as a working class man, you got to follow the money trail. And so I went to another business that was non-union. And, you know, I get paid more.
You actually get paid more. Well, that's good. Normally, I was going to say, what's happened in so many industries like that is that used to be heavily union, like meat cutters and what have you, now that's just back to $7-$8 an hour. But if you're doing better than that, congratulations. Appreciate it, Darren. Thanks for your call. Where is that? I've been meaning to give this for a long time. Yeah. David writes in the call talk, yes, at yahoo.com. It's 11 to 12 p.m. Eastern Time in Florida, and I'm listening to you on WRIF in Detroit online. Is this broadcast live? Well, there's your answer, David, since I just read it. You know, people have been writing that recently. They don't, for one thing, if you're listening around the country, Michigan, Detroit, I guess all of Michigan, is on Eastern Time. We're not Central. That means we're in the far western end of the Eastern Zone, which is very nice because we get late, twilights here and what have you. But thanks, David, for listening from so far away, and thanks to all of you who are listening online or, I guess, however else, right? All right, 313-298-WRIF is our phone number, and let's see. Oh, some more people have been waiting a long time. My apologies as well to you, Julie. Thanks for joining us in Farmington. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. I was just wanting to talk about a little bit about the dogs and the media that you had kind of touched on earlier. And I had wanted to tell you that I have actually rescued and actually have a couple of Staffordshire Terriers, or as the media calls them, pit bulls, labeled. And I just wanted to say that there has been a ton of negative media on them, and I definitely think that's not fair. And I just wanted to say, judge the deed, not the breed. And that definitely these dogs and many others are sweet, loyal, loving family breeds when treated nice, just as any other breed is. And just as on the Internet the other day on AOL, it actually even tells one of the most dogs prone to bite are actually Dutch hounds, little tiny small dogs. And I think that people need to adopt, not buy, and just really do the research before you get a dog to make sure it fits your family and what you're looking for.
Sure, I agree. And I'll tell you, if you want a dog that is low maintenance and live a long time, mutts are much, much better, too, because you get breeds that they're much more susceptible to genetic defects, you know, hip dysplasia. I mean, you know, the things like golden retrievers and all that are beautiful, wonderful dogs, and, some of the shepherds and what have you. But I'll tell you, Jillian Jordan, who's not here tonight, she now lives with a pit bull. I mean, she has someone who's living with her has a pit bull.
Yeah.
And my wife will not let our dog even go over to her house. And Jillian says, look, this dog is so sweet and so nice. I think I said the last time I was on that every period there's like a bad dog, and it used to be Dobermans, and it used to be German Shepherds. People were really
Rottweilers.
And then Rottweilers. Yeah. and what have you. You know, so
yeah, it continues to go on. And I just wanted to say exactly like you said, mutts usually are always the best. We also have a mutt as well. And I can say out of the mutt and the pure breeds that we've had, the mutts have been the ones that have had to definitely have the less vet bills than the pure breeds.
There you go. Thanks for the advice, Julie.
Thank you. Adopt out there.
All right, I appreciate it. And while we're on that subject, here's Jason in Howell. Wants to talk about homeless animals. Hi, Jason. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter.
Hi.
I'm not calling about no homeless animals. I was just calling to say that I went out to roll the windows up in my truck, and the radio came on, and we were starting to talk about the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac deal, and I just left the radio on and sat there and listened to that, and I just figured I had to call in and tell you that, you know, I run a small business, small tile business.
Yeah.
Out of Howell, and I think we've lost all sight of like small business and things like that. All I know is that, you know, I'm 30 years old. I've been in it 10 years in my business, and it's pretty tough out there to make any money if you're Johnny Honest with your taxes and everything. And like you said, you see the money being spent. And all I know is that I'm 30 years old, and this is not the way it's supposed to be.
No, and we know, I mean, we see everywhere that just if you're running any kind of vehicles, how does that cut into your bottom line, right?
Yeah, exactly. I drive a four-door, 6.0 Chevy pickup, and it gets 11 miles to the gallon. But, you know, you got to understand from my perspective, in order for me to stay busy, believe it or not, it makes a difference if you pull into somebody's driveway in a nice vehicle.
Sure.
And, you know, and right now I'm going, man, you know, a new truck is through the roof.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't afford the fuel. And then, you know, you got people beating you down right now because rates are so cheap. And it's bad news. And I think that it's just pretty sad that at 30 years old you can say, wow, this isn't right, you know.
Yeah. And that's such a shame. I mean, because any small businessman, anybody running their own little business, just works their butt off. I got to take a break. Thank you, Jason, though.
One more thing, you know, just like, for instance, you know, what we got going on down here in Detroit with our mayor and stuff, this is just costing us so much money and we're bleeding as it is. I mean, get him out of there. Let's get this thing moving on, you know?
Yeah. The reason, by the way, that I said homeless animals, we have this, you know, I got this little chart up in front, and that's what it said you wanted to talk about. But good. Julie covered the subject before you very well, and you covered this one as well. So thank you very much. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back.
I want you all to know.
This is the greatest country in the world.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this. Another WRIF concert.
The song all summer long. The concerts all week long. Now an unprecedented fourth show has been added. Friday, July 25th at DTE Energy Music Theater.
Because you know your soul.
Show the world how it's done. Kid Rock Live.
Sweet Home Alabama, all summer long.
The American Badass, Kid Rock.
Cowboy Badass is back.
Featuring his expanded 11-piece Twisted Brown Trucker Band. Friday, July 25th at DTE Energy Music Theater.
Cowboy.
Special guest. Rev Rock of the legendary rap group Run DMC, plus Uncle Cracker. Tickets are on sale now at LiveNation.com, AliceNet.com, The Box Office, and Ticketmaster. Part of the Bell Tire Concert Series, produced by Live Nation. Kid Rock, ain't no party like a Detroit party.
You want a Harley? We want your business. Through the end of July, we're going to give you the best interest rate offered by any dealership, 3.99%. And what's more, the first 2 years of riding, the gas will be on us. Free gas for 2 years at Brighton Harley-Davidson in Brighton and American Harley-Davidson and Buell in Ann Arbor. We could go on about the biggest selection, the best showroom, service, blah, blah, blah. Here's what you need to know. 3.99% interest and free gas for 2 years. I hope you got all that. Remember, this offer is through the end of July only, and you get the best interest rate offered by anyone. 3.99%. And the first 2 years of riding, the gas is on us. Brighton, Harley-Davidson, and Brighton.
This just in.
Free Gas Wednesday. All day this Wednesday. 101. WRIF will be giving you chances to win free gas on the air.
Keep it locked on 101 The Rip for your shot at a $101 gas card.
Plus, you'll qualify for the grand prize. A Rip gas card valued at $1,000. It's Free Gas Wednesday. This Wednesday from 101. WRIF.
Everything rocks.
Look at Mash Gym. Mash Gym is the top MMA training facility in Michigan. At Mash Gym, cleanliness and professionalism are their top priorities. Mash Gym is a state-of-the-art facility with the best of the best certified personal trainers. Sure, they've got cardio, kickboxing, kids' martial arts, a dry sauna, and fat loss programs. But Mash Gym is known for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai, and MMA classes. This is a serious training facility with a full-size Cajun boxing ring. Whether you're training for fun or training to fight, Mash Gym can accommodate all fitness levels, beginner to advanced. Mash Gym on 8 Mile Road in Redford. Inside, you'll find the best facility with the best instructors. Take Mash Gym seriously, and you'll get serious results. For a free class and tour, call 1-888-4-MASH-GYM or check out mashgym.com. Don't forget to ask about their WRIF discount.
At Premier Garage, your garage is their passion. From the best in floor coating products to the finest cabinetry and organizers designed specifically for the harsh garage environment. Premier Garage is the answer to the most used and overlooked space in your home. With Premier Garage's products, your garage and workspace will have a look that your neighbors will envy. And the protection will last a lifetime. Visit PremierGarage.com right now to see why they're the nation's leader in garage enhancement. They're one of America's fastest growing companies. Solid proof they're doing things right. For a limited time, WRIF online listeners can take an additional $250 off summer pricing. Grab yourself. Schedule an appointment with a Premier Garage Design Consultant. You'll receive a free virtual preview of your garage transformation and a $250 RIF online listener instant rebate on your garage upgrade. That's right, a free on-site virtual preview and a $250 rebate. What more could you ask for? Come on, call Premier Garage today at 248-669-8900. That's 248-669-8900 or on the web at premiergarage.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Dan Moroff, the owner of the Cherry Hill Dental Center. I've built my practice on being a pioneer in the dental industry, and most importantly, offering all the latest and greatest services at a realistic and affordable price here in Metro Detroit. We offer everything from your best cleaning ever to a complete overhaul of your smile, and most importantly, your confidence. Being a one-office practice, I need to spend my limited advertising dollars carefully, which is why I partner with Brian and WRIF. After learning about my practice, Brian suggested I use my own voice so you could get to know the real me. Cherry Hill Dental Center's Get the Smile message, plus WRIF's responsive audience, have equaled great success for me and my staff.
Thanks, Dr. Dan. If you think your practice or business could benefit from an owner association campaign, give me a call at...
Allow me. Call Brian at 248-591-6832. That's 248-591-6832. Give Brian a call and trust me, he'll call you back.
Greatly appreciated.
How about those playoff tickets?
It's a WRIF Motor City Riffs local music showcase at New York and Chesterfield. It all happens this Saturday night with WRIF's Jack Up Rock, Doug Bodell, with Detroit's own The Orbitons live on stage. Always the best local rock of the deep. The Motor City Riffs local music showcase at New York, inside the Premier Entertainment Complex, 23 miles, just 2 miles east of I-94 in Chesterfield, with 101 WRIF. Everything That rocks.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
I want to hear the revolution. I want to hear the revolution. Show them the system. It's time to test the man. I want to know. Are you ready to testify? Are you ready?
Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back to our final hour. Peter Werby here with you without Jalene Jordan. Jalene off for the evening. She did 18 straight radio shifts, all rock and roll, including some live performances down at Detroit Powerboat Races. And she's got to be on the air at 9:45 tomorrow. So I said, Jalene, Stay home. 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. At 1 a.m. Eastern Time, Buffy St. Marie, the Academy Award-winning singer-songwriter and Native American activist, is going to be my guest. She's going to be appearing live and free at the Concert of Colors. Man, go to concertofcolors.org. Concertofcolors.org, is it .com? One or the other. I think maybe it's even .com. Yeah, it's concertofcolors.com. And it's this free musical festival that goes Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Bonnaroo, in fact, I think I say this on the interview with Buffy St. Marie, costs $250. This is absolutely free. It's all down at the Detroit Symphony Orchestra's Orchestra Hall. In fact, Buffy St. Marie is going to be appearing along with the DSO. So it's incredible. Also, Tyler Coleman, who wrote a book called Wine Politics. Huh? Wine Politics, someone said to me. How Governments, Environmentalists, Mobsters, and Critics Influence the Wines We Drink. So that's at 1 a.m. In the meantime, lots of time for your calls. 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. Before the break, I was saying, you know, turn off television. It's absolutely useless of trying to make sense of political stuff. And whether you agree or disagree with me, I mean, don't you admit that I at least have a passing sense of what's going on? I never watch television at all. And if I thought it was useful, I would watch it all the time. This is the business I'm in. I never look at it at all, except for, and here, this is the point, that Roscoe, who is at Johnson Tattoo, and he writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I agree with you about television being a huge distraction from important issues, but I've been noting how you and Jolene seem to overlook how corporate team sports also serve as a huge distraction from the same issues, only add to the sports phenomena the propaganda value of teaching the public jingoism. With kind of military expansionism from childhood all the way through adulthood. I see nothing progressive in following team sports. The sports apparatus is a huge corporate advertising mechanism, and most of the players on these teams aren't even from our own location. Well, I mean, that's all true, but I don't know. I still like to watch sports. And that's not even, I disagree with you. Let's see here. I haven't even read this one through, but we had somebody on a little while ago talking about that they were a meat cutter. They were union. They moved on to a non-union job that they actually said was paid better. But Sean and Warren writes, and my father-in-law used to boast about how he pays his employees well and has good benefits so they don't unionize. Always found it funny how they boasted about how well they are treated in their non-union shop, seeing it was a direct result of union efforts. Maybe our non-union meat cutter fares well for similar reasons. That's true. I mean, that's why some of these companies at the UAW tried to organize weren't successful, like Mercedes-Benz in Alabama. I think they tried to organize Honda and Toyota, whatever. But what they did, they said, "Wow, we don't want this union in, so we're going to pay rates that are almost the same or as the same in some cases." But, I mean, why do you think companies don't want unions in? Because it costs them money, right? They always say, "Oh, you know, it's bad for our family here." What a lot of hooey. All right, I got to get this. Here's Todd in Southgate. Hey, Todd, it's Peter without Jolene. You're on the air.
Peter. How can you sit there and say that that guy who's the richest guy in New York, how is it that you believe that the government should take his money and you should put a cap on it? Isn't that awfully communistic?
I mean, you could call it that, but a real communist wouldn't want to leave him with, like, $200 million, like I said. I just was saying that since there are so many problems that could be solved with an infusion of cash, including lots of ones in Southgate, why is one man sitting on $17 billion?
That doesn't matter. He earned it.
Well, I don't know that he did. How could he earn $17 billion? There is a tax structure, and at certain levels, it's progressive, although it's certainly a lot less progressive than it ever used to be. And the idea was that a redistribution of income stopped there being a powerful economic elite that transforms into, guess what, a political elite. So democracy is just a sham, because old Mr. what was his name, David Koch, I mean, he can buy and sell every politician in New York City, except for the mayor, who's also a billionaire. So it's the rule of the rich. It's called a plutocracy. That's what they used to call it, 100 years ago.
Yeah, but here's the problem. Okay, like, let's say I'm not trying to guess your salary or anything, Peter. Don't get me wrong. But let's say you make 100 grand a year. You know what? To that poor guy who's sitting on the street right now, you're awfully rich, and you should be only left with $5,000 a year. Would that be fair, too?
Well, you know, there has to be some social consensus of what is too much. Now, you might say, look, we're looking at capitalism, right? So unless we want to say we want complete communism, we want everyone to make exactly the same, and there's a few people left that say that, but probably 99% of the people just want a fairer deal. And it makes a lot more sense for instance, as they used to have, that over $6 million income, this was up till 1960 in the federal tax code, that there was a 90% tax. So when you, on your next million, when you made $7 million, you wound up with only $100,000 of it. So you made $6,100,000. Well, I mean, the $6 million was taxed as well. But there was an idea, like I said, that the concentration of wealth, as we saw, say, from after the Civil War, I mean, it was always true in this country, but particularly this massive accumulation of wealth occurred after the Civil War with what they called the robber barons, that it distorted the whole idea of democracy. I mean, if there's somebody who's making $5,000 a year and somebody that can afford to write a check for $100 million, and it's not even... Wait a minute, Todd, can you do the math? What percentage is 100 million of 17 billion? Are you good at that? I'm not.
It's about about 0.1%, something like that.
Well, the guy's not even generous. I mean, why the hell doesn't he buy all of Lincoln Center or something like that?
It's his money. Who are you to tell him?
Well, I don't know. I guess I don't think it is. I think it has a social quality to it, that it was made by everyone, that it was made by the city of New York. I mean, these investments that he made, at a lot of levels, there's people working. And people like there's some wealthy liberals. But the majority of them are trying to figure out how can they keep wages down? How can they stop people from unionizing. Here's guys, if you imagine this, that are multimillionaires, in this case billionaires, that are trying to stop legislation that would raise the minimum wage. That's pretty evil.
Oh my gosh. Peter, do you listen? Do you hear what you're saying?
No, wait a minute. Let me see. Oh, you know, I didn't hear what I was saying. Can we get that played back? Brandon, can you play that back for me?
I don't know how.
He doesn't know how. I'm sorry.
Peter.
Yeah.
You're upset because a shop might not want union, right? That is somebody else's shop. Why? That's their shop. You are not. It's not your right to tell them what to do with it. It's not your right to tell that other guy who's rich what to do with his money. He did something with $100 million, and yet, as a liberal, you still complain about it.
A liberal? We're much more radical than that. Come on. But in any event, I mean, again, these are social values. You have the social philosophy of the conservative employer. I have the social philosophy that created Social Security and unemployment insurance and the weekend and the 8-hour day and everything that people were shot down in the streets by goon squads and police and National Guard and Pinkertons, detective agencies, to stop all of that from occurring. Because under your philosophy, Todd, people were worked 12, 14, sometimes 16 hours a day. Kids, who are we to tell a corporation that they can't hire an 8-year-old to work in their factory?
Peter, that doesn't happen. You know it.
Well, the only reason it doesn't happen is because people fought for laws that prohibited employers from doing what they wanted. They created a minimum wage that said you can't pay people less than this no matter what you can get them for. Because I don't know how much it started off at, say, 50 cents. Well, they could get people for 20 cents. But it said you have to pay people a decent wage. In some cities, including Detroit, they've passed what they call living wage. Yeah, minimum wages, you can't live on that. So they have living wages. If you're going to do business with the city, you've got to pay your workers a living wage. So you can't really argue this. You have the philosophy of the conservative ultra-rich, the 19th century robber barons, and, I assume that you're living in Southgate, that you're not the ultra-wealthy. So, Todd, as usual, the bosses thank you.
Peter, I'm a cab driver. You're right. I'm definitely not rich by any stretch. But what you're doing is you're trying to take away people's personal freedom to go out and work as hard as they can and make as much money as possible because you think poor people are entitled to rich people's money.
Poor people? What about middle-class people that are working their butts off? And why? What is your big concern, the fact that I would take David Koch's $17 billion and reduce it to $200 million?
And you shouldn't be able to do that to an American, Peter.
Oh, come on. Well, we did that all along, and we told the David Koch's of the world that they can't hire 8-year-olds for their plants, and we told them you have to have safe plants. And, you know, the conservative philosophy is that people will go to work somewhere else. But when people tried to organize for decent wages and decent working conditions and decent benefits, the National Guard or the Chicago police or the Detroit police came out and shot people down. I mean, just to organize unions, 300 people lost their lives during the 1930s because they had the temerity to stand up to the employers, the type that you're defending, the Henry Fords and what have you, and said, look, we work. We're providing you with this enormous wealth, and we want this piddling little share of it. They weren't socialists. They weren't communists. They weren't anything like that. They just demanded to be treated like a human being. And I got to tell you, Todd, you'd be sending people back to the 19th century, but I don't even think it matters because unless we do something soon, we're all going to be sent back there. Hey, call in next week. I'm going to have something special for you. Thanks a lot. Appreciate your call. Let's see. Here's Jimmy in St. Clair Shores. Jimmy, hi. It's Peter Werby.
Hi, Peter. At the beginning of the show, it sounded like you were getting down on yourself about people telling you were too negative about certain things.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're just being a realist.
Yeah, that's right. Are you a pessimist or a realist, right?
A real, you know. And then I just want to make a couple more statements, then I got a question for you.
Sure.
With the political arena, you know, they're still, you know, looking at the race thing. We're human beings, you know, but this country forever still wants to classify you black, white, Hispanic, you know, whatever. Which, you know, you'd think this country would have come longer than that, farther than that.
Well, you know what? I don't know if you've heard me say it before, but why don't we classify Barack Obama as white? If he's half white and half black, I mean, actually, he's not black. He's mixed race.
But,
right?
You know, from
we all are
south,
probably
the deep south, you know, the one drop rule. You remember that?
Yeah. One drop of blood. One drop of black blood. I mean, that is so insane.
Yes, it is.
And what's the difference anyway?
I understand. And my question, Peter, is I understand Karl Rove is snubbing his nose at the subpoena.
Sure.
And is that over the Valerie Plame thing or is that over the whole Iraq war?
You know, the Bushco, I haven't even used that phrase in so long, is such an outlaw regime and has committed so many violations of international law, which rise to the level of war crimes, that they have shredded the Constitution, that they are guilty of so many high crimes and misdemeanors that that it's hard for me even to keep track of which violation of law, in this case, ignoring subpoenas from a duly constituted committee of Congress. But there are a number of things. The fact that Rove was involved in a criminal violation right there, as was Bush and Cheney. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Someone knows exactly about that. Where there was something more. Oh, yeah, yeah. He said, wow, man, Werby's such a whack job. He's calling the President of the United States a war criminal. Who other than a nut job communist, socialist, anarchist could do that? Well, how about Major General Antonio Taguba? He was the deputy commanding general for support for the Third Army for 10 months in Kuwait during the early days of the Iraq occupation. In a statement released today, he bluntly accuses the Bush administration of war crimes and lays down a challenge for prosecution. So, gee, guess what? Not so wacky, unless these guys are wacky, too. How about this? The dean of Massachusetts School of Law at Andover is planning a September conference to map out war crimes prosecutions, and the targets are President Bush and other administration officials. The dean, Lawrence Velville, said in a statement that plans will be laid and necessary organizational structures set up to pursue the guilty as long as necessary. When I read this, oh, by the way, what kind of radical journal is this in? Oh, it's the American Bar Association Journal. Other possible defendants, he said, include federal judges. I'm thinking, wow, maybe this guy is a whack job. John Yoo, the former Justice Department official who wrote one of the so-called torture memos. What do you mean so-called? It is a torture memo. He says that the dean says he criticizes Justice Department officials for their legal memos. The DOJ lawyers who wrote the corrupt legal memos giving attempted cover to Bush's actions have been rewarded by federal judgeships, cabinet positions, and professorships. You know, a few weeks ago, too, I had this guest on, Vincent Bugliosi. Vincent Bugliosi was the famed prosecutor of Charles Manson way back in 1971. He's a big-time author. He's written three number one bestsellers and won three Edgar Allan Poe Awards, a top honor for crime writers. And he wrote the famous book about his trial of Manson called Helter Skelter. But he's written a brand new book that's now on the New York Times bestseller list. It's called The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. You may have heard, if you stay up late or listened early Sunday mornings, you may have heard the interview I did with him. And one of the things, you know what? He said this to me after we hung up. He said, and I wish that would have been in the interview. He said, I wouldn't risk my reputation. And Vincent Bugliosi's reputation is incredible as a jurist and a debater and what have you. He's doing, actually, he's doing an HBO series on the Kennedy assassination with Tom Hanks. I mean, you know, so this guy's not, I mean, he's mainstream. But he has been absolutely, oh, did I mention what the title of the book? The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. It's risen to the bestseller status. But he cannot get anywhere on any big-time television show. Just doesn't give him any play whatsoever. All the calls from his handlers go unanswered. He's had 100 radio interviews, including me being one of them. But even Comedy Central's Daily Show wouldn't pick up on it. But I guess I felt somewhat, what's the word, not justified, or whatever, for having him on the air, because I did get a little bit of flack for this. You're calling the President of the United States a murderer. And he, Bush is beginning to get advice that after January 20th of next year, when he leaves office, the only countries in the world he should go to are, Saudi Arabia and Israel. Those are going to be the only places that that he's going to be free from not being grabbed, because, you know, they some of these countries will indict U.S. officials like Henry Kissinger for his crimes against humanity that he's committed over a 40-year period. And he can hardly go anywhere without fear of getting arrested. All right. So, that could be George W. Bush as well, and well-deserved. Here's Joe in Flint. Joe, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
Going good.
Hey, you know, I said that guy you had on a couple minutes ago about, he's there yelling at you about you saying this guy should have a cap. I think that guy should have a cap of $1 million. And, you know, I mean, what does he need $16 billion for anyways?
Well, he doesn't need it.
I'm making 60, and I can't afford to pay my own bills. I'm borrowing money from everybody. I make $60,000 a year, and I work every day. I haven't had a vacation in 12 years.
Boy.
And you know what I got? I got out of it? Nothing. I pay child support, which is $340 a week.
Yikes.
And you know what I mean? I don't got no insurance. I fell last night. I barbecued on a barbecue grill, went through my leg, and you know what I did? I put some Epsom salt on it, and I'm driving my truck right now.
Boy, that's terrible.
You know? So I can't afford nothing, and these guys are saying, I make 60 grand. I make good money, but I don't make good money. I make crappy money, if you think about it.
Well, you know, Joe, if we had a fair tax system, which would tax the hell out of people like a guy that has $17 billion in worth, we could afford, and we didn't have wars in Iraq, and we didn't have this enormous military-industrial complex that has 700-800 bases around the world. And we weren't giving money to Israel and Egypt and Jordan and Saudi Arabia and all these other places. We could put a $50,000 tax deduction right off the top. So if you made 60 grand, you'd be paying tax on 10,000. And guys like, Mr. Moneybags would wind up, you know, like you said, with a paltry 1 million.
Exactly. My kids are going through struggling right now. They're in their 14s and 12s, and I'm trying. I want to take them places and go do stuff with them. I can't afford to do nothing. You know, it's like I feel I'm depressed. But when I was at my ages, my mom, I didn't have a dad, because he, you know, anyways, I went and did a bunch of stuff. I mean, I'm making way more than my mom ever made, and I can't afford to even put clothes on my kids.
I know. I see some of the prices. I mean, for one thing, you just got to drive someplace, and then to get into a ball game or get into an amusement park, it's an arm and a leg. Well, don't get depressed, Joe. Get mad, and then we got to find some constructive way to take this anger. You know, the thing, I'm mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore. But that's all good for all of us to say, because we don't want to roll over to these folks. But we've got to get some positive vision. And it's not like me. I'm not going to say, here's your positive vision, Joe, and everybody else. We've got to work together to figure this out. And people did that in 1776, and they did it in the Civil War, and they on and on and on. You know, we've done that before. We've reconstructed social reality. And guys like Todd, I'm sorry to talk about you, Todd, when you're not listening, but guys like Todd, I mean, they're like yesterday's newspaper, and they have no solutions. I mean, if you think about it, the only thing that conservative thinks are wrong with the country is that they're people that are liberals. You say, what's wrong with this country? And they say, oh, people that say blah, blah, blah. You know, in other words, everything else is okay. I don't get it. All right, Joe, thank you very much. I appreciate you calling. Where does our money go? I mentioned the military-industrial complex. I don't know if you saw this little bit, but the United States and the Czech Republic signed an accord on last Tuesday that allowed the Pentagon to deploy part of this anti-ballistic missile shield on Czech soil. They go, what? I mean, this is, again, on the doorstep to Russia. And this is why Russia is so upset. And you know why they have this, right? Because we, you and me, with our tax dollars, because every amount of money that's being spent on this enormous multi-billion-dollar system that they want to put in Europe, that would be this anti-ballistic system against rogue nations, which from the Middle East, like Iran, that might lob a nuclear missile at the Czech Republic. I mean, huh? I mean, why in the world would they want to do that? I mean, you could say they might want to lob it at Israel. They might want to lob it at us. They might want to lob it at Saudi Arabia, something like that. But why in the world would they want to lob it at Poland or the Czech Republic? I mean, somebody might want to lob it at them because they're the front guard for the empire. I mean, what else do you call a country that has bases all around the world? I mean, we're Rome. We are Rome of the 21st century. And they went down the drain like most major empires have. In fact, all major empires, because of overextension, because of wealth, that rather than going back into the country and taking care of domestic needs, went to defend the empire abroad. And this has become the basis of our economy, a military-industrial complex. So we wind up every year, when you total everything up, probably $1 trillion a year is spent on the military. We could cut that by 80% easily. We could take care of all of our problems. We could take care of lots of other people's problems. Now all we have is a problem because of it. And Condoleezza Rice, who's running around getting these things signed, she's saying, why are you getting upset? And, you know, like the United States, this thing where the Iran's Revolutionary Guard test-fired all these missiles. I mean, some of them were real, some of them weren't. And one of the, I guess I got out of it, they don't even have the capacity to reach Central Europe. They can't even reach Central Europe. I hope I didn't say Central America one time. No, good. Everybody's, no, you didn't beat. Thanks. That's good. But Rice, now, who's really upset is Russia. And she says, Russia should back off its threats and intimidation of countries once under the Soviet clamp. Now, what the hell is this all about? Russia should back off its threat. What Russia said, look, if you're going to start surrounding our country again with weaponry, we're going to retaliate in a way as we're going to start bringing up our military facing off what you're doing, because this is pretty clear to them that this is aimed at Russia. This is not aimed at Iran, which, you remember the CIA finding, what was that thing called? I thought I had it here. They have a presidential finding or something like that, National Intelligence Estimate, that said Iran is not producing a nuclear weapon. This is put together by the CIA. So Iran right now is not producing nuclear weapons. And what if it was? I mean, there shouldn't be any nuclear weapons. Iran shouldn't have any. Israel shouldn't have any. The United States shouldn't. France shouldn't. England shouldn't. Whoever else has them. India and Pakistan certainly shouldn't. But they all have it. And a lot of those countries are much, much more dangerous than Iran, which doesn't have it and doesn't have the capacity and doesn't have the delivery system. But what in the hell would you think if you were Iran or Russia? If Russia had 700-800 bases all around the world, had bases in Central America, had bases in Canada, had bases in Mexico, and also Iran, the United States is fighting wars on its eastern border in Afghanistan and on its western border. Both those countries are extremely close to Russia. What would you think if you were one of those countries, the leadership there, and you knew the expansive nature of the American empire? Wouldn't you think, hey, these guys are up to no good? They want to control resources. They want forward basing. They are a military threat to us. They're not in our face. I mean, we talk about Iran meddling in Iraq. I mean, are you serious? What in the hell are we doing in the Middle East in the first place? Oh, yeah, oil. I forgot about that. Oh, yeah. The other part, by the way, of this missile system is going to be in Poland, and that would be where actually the missiles would be. So Poland is saying, well, you're not going to exactly just waltz right in here. What we want are billions of dollars in U.S. investment to upgrade its air defenses and its military. So you ready for this? They want us to take our money. Yeah, you and me, and our money, and our family's money, yeah, and they're going to spend it on upgrading the Polish military. That's what our tax dollars are going to go for. They're not going to take our state out of debt. They're not going to reduce our school kids' classes from 35 to 15. They're not going to improve our roads. They're not going to give us a universal health care. They're not going to give us free college. Our billions of dollars that we pay in taxes are going to be to upgrade Poland's military. Is something wrong here, folks? Come on. All right, 313-298-WRIF. Here is Pam in St. Louis, the home of Anheuser-Busch.
The ex-home of Anheuser-Busch.
That's right.
They got bought out by InBev, and this ties into what one of your other callers was talking about. He doesn't know what he's talking about, because there's people at Anheuser-Busch that are probably shaking in their boots, because they don't know if they're going to have a job or not.
Oh, they promised, Pam, that they were going to keep everything the same.
Oh, bull. They never keep everything the same. This guy has got a reputation for cost-cutting to begin with.
Yeah.
So they don't know. They don't know what's going to happen. And plus, not only is this going to endanger...
Pam. I lost Pam. I don't know what to say. All right. If you put Pam on hold, I don't know what happened there. We'll take a break and be right back. 313-298-WRIF.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
It's after 8 p.m. and you're hungry. Really hungry. But where can you go? Leo's Coney Island in Plymouth. You know, you'll get ultra-fast friendly service, green prices, and the one-of-a-kind satisfaction of a Leo's chili-loaded natural casing Coney dog. And now, you can get Leo's 24 hours a day, Thursday through Saturday, at their newest location in Plymouth on the corner of Ann Arbor and Haggerty Roads. Get this. All month long, the Plymouth location is offering a tasty special. Riff listeners can get 10% off their entire bill. That's right. Mention this commercial and you save 10%. But hurry. This Riff special is only available at Leo's Coney Island at the corner of Ann Arbor and Haggerty in Plymouth. So now you know, everything on the menu is 10% off for WRIF listeners. But it's only available at the newest Leo's location in Plymouth at the corner of Ann Arbor and Haggerty. And the new Plymouth Leo's, it's open 24 hours Thursday through Saturday. Leo's newest Coney Island at Ann Arbor and Haggerty Roads. No matter what the time, why wait when food this tempting is waiting for you?
Why would you sit around all summer and act like a band in a video game when you could be training to be the person who plays that band on the radio? I know what you're thinking. You don't want to be cooped up in a stuffy school listening to boring lecture after lecture. At Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts, students get to play while they learn. You get to be behind the mic,
designing lighting for a set, writing scripts, editing video or audio, or even designing a website. Specs Howard is anything but dull because you not only learn what to do, you do it while you learn. That's why I went to Specs Howard, and this summer I won't be cooped up at all. I'll be enjoying the summer outside at concerts and putting on festivals. I didn't want a normal job, and Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts helped me get a job that's anything but boring. So, if you're ready to get started, here's what you do. Call 866-61-SPECS before July 31st and ask how Specs Howard can get you started on a cool career this summer.
Call 866-61-SPECS or visit SpecsHoward.edu. This is where you start.
Another WRIF concert.
Five bands, 50 million albums, a summer of excess. Crewfest 2008. Cherry, Papa Roach, 6 a.m., and Trapped. This Tuesday, DTE Energy Music Theater. Starring Motley Crue with Buck Cherry. Papa Roach, 6 a.m., Trapped. And featuring the rock band Second Stage Experience. New album, Saints of Los Angeles, in stores now. Pick up your copy of the Crewfest CD exclusively at Best Buy. Get tickets at LiveNation.com, PalaceNet.com, the Palace Box Office, and Ticketmaster. Four-pack of lawn tickets, $99, plus applicable charges. Part of the Bell Tire Concert Series. Crewfest 2008, the loudest show on earth. Powered by TheRockVine.com.
Prepare yourself for the return of the No Fear Music Tour. This year features the relentless thundering intimidation of Bullet for My Valentine. Plus special guests, Bleeding Through, and Cancer Bats. Saturday, August 16th, Fillmore, Detroit. Get tickets now at Live Nation and Ticketmaster. Produced by Live Nation.
The wait is over. The time is now. Max and Igor Cavalera, together again after 12 long years. The Cavalera Conspiracy will be unleashed on July 27th at Clutch Cargos in Pontiac. With special guests Dillinger Escape Plan, Throw Down, and Bury Your Dead. Get your tickets today at LiveNation.com and Ticketmaster. Produced by Live Nation.
Oh, yes, you heard me right. Oh, get ready for Motor City Steals and Deals Christmas in July auction. Log on now through Monday, July 14th.
This is my car. My car? I don't know how I lived without it.
Muscle car fanatics. Join the Rift Cyber Crew for free today at WRIF.com and get signed up for the Rift Muscle Car Club. Get special invitations for upcoming WRIF Muscle Car Club events
with a chance to win best in show, best paint, best engine, and best interior.
One lucky Rift Muscle Car Club member will be front and center with a Rift at the 2009 Autorama. Sign up now with the Rift Cyber Crew at WRIF.com. It's totally free. The WRIF Muscle Car Club.
Brought to you by Glendale Auto Supply. Shop a real auto parts store.
At 101.
Hey, Dad.
What?
I can't get the ketchup bottle open.
Here, let me try. Yeah, stuck all right. Now watch. If you take your palm like this and smack it on the bottom right here, you can get it open pretty easily. Here you go.
Thanks.
You don't have to be a hero to be a hero. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To find out how you can adopt, please visit our website at AdoptUSKids.org or call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
We inherited this business from our father.
Who got it from his father?
We needed an emergency preparedness plan in case of fire, cyber attack,
or anything.
So we went to Ready.gov and got free checklists, templates, and more to be prepared. Thanks to Ready.gov, we worry less about keeping Rizzo and Sons in business.
Only it should be Rizzo and grandsons.
And granddaughter.
Right.
Go to Ready.gov for details on creating an emergency preparedness plan. Becoming a success is hard work. Protecting it isn't.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, the Ad Council, and the station.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much, Jalene Jordan, off for the evening. Remember, at 1 a.m., my special guest, Buffy St. Marie, the Academy Award-winning singer-songwriter, is going to be in Detroit Thursday, July 17th, at Free special performance with the Detroit Symphony Orchestra at Orchestra Hall, downtown Detroit, launches Concert of Colors. ConcertofColors.com will give you a list of the incredible acts from all around the world, Real Diversity Festival, including a lot of Detroit music as well. Let's see. Mike writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Peter, whenever you discuss an equal distribution, Whenever you discuss an equitable distribution of wealth, fair distribution of wealth, such as you were doing, you'll find that those who argue the most passionately against it haven't got a pot to piss in. Example, the guy who was arguing with you as a cab driver. Uh-huh. All right. We unceremoniously somehow cut off Pam from St. Louis. You're back on the air. Hi, Pam.
Yes, I was just talking about the Anheuser-Busch InBev merger.
Right.
And how it relates to what the Todd said.
Yeah.
Well, think about this. There was talk that they were going to eliminate 2,000 jobs before the merger. So what do you think is going to happen? Those jobs are probably still going to be eliminated. And this city has lost a crown jewel that it had. Because when you said Anheuser-Busch, everybody always said, hey, that's St. Louis.
Sure.
And it's an American icon. It's no longer American anymore.
Where is it? Netherlands? Is that who bought it?
Belgium.
Belgium, that's right.
It's run by Brazilians, and the man that's running it has a reputation of being a cost cutter. What else is he going to do?
Sure.
They got to finance $50 billion.
What are we going to do? Sell off everything in the United States? Looks that way.
It looks like that's what we're going to do. But
doesn't
for
it?
Everybody that loses their job in Anheuser-Busch, some other business that was depending on their money is going to have less customers and possibly could go out of business.
Sure.
Just when we lost McDonnell Douglas, all the car dealerships and stores and everything that was around there, for the most part, didn't stay in business.
Yep. It's like a little pyramid.
So why is he defending these ultra-wealthy people when it was the ultra-wealthy family members that sold the company down the river?
You know what the Stockholm syndrome is?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you
that's
fall
where
in love with the person who's kidnapped you and abused you.
Right, exactly. And also, there was an American psychologist, Bruno Bettelheim, who I think was in Nazi concentration camps, or if he wasn't in them, he studied them. And he realized that one of the ways that people dealt with unrelenting aggression was to identify with the aggressor. And so, I mean, it's deeply psychological. I mean, and you imagine this guy getting indignant to talk about a fairer distribution of how wealth that all of us contribute to.
Well, listen, number one thing. Mr. Billionaire Next Door is a major shareholder of Anheuser-Busch, and he was all for the merger.
Sure.
He definitely doesn't need any money.
Maybe InBev could buy.
And then as far as him saying earning it, Mr. Billionaire Next Door cuts a deal with the state of Florida where they pay him up front $225 million, no strings attached. So that he can be the backdoor insurer for the hurricane season. Well, if the hurricane season doesn't turn out to be that bad, he still gets to pocket $225 million of Floridians' tax dollars.
Sweet. Maybe we can get InBev to buy General Motors. That could be the next to go bankrupt. Pam, thanks for calling Night Call all the way from St. Louis. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You have a good one. And one of our national listeners, let's see. Here's Keith and Warren. Keith, hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Keith.
Okay. I got a lot to talk about here. Okay.
Keith.
All right.
Keith, you waited so long and you blew it. Sorry to do that. A couple open lines finally for the first time all night. If you've been trying to get through, you can do it now. 313-298-WRIF. Here is Dean and Taylor. Dean, hi. It's Peter Werby on WRIF. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, Peter. I was calling about the guy a few calls back that was crying about not being able to pay his bills.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but I mean, if you can't pay your bills on $60,000 a year, then you're obviously mismanaging your finances, or you're stupid. I mean, there's really no other way to put that.
Well, did you remember one of the things that he said? He was paying what, $350 a week for child support.
Yeah. Guess how many dollars a week I pay in child support?
How much?
Zero, because I've made the proper decisions, we'll say, throughout my life, so that I don't have to pay child support on kids that I'm not going to be able to raise in my household.
Well, you're not scoring real high in the compassion meter.
Well,
I'll tell you. But let me tell you this, Dean. I mean, if for some reason or other my wife ran off with another guy or whatnot, I guess then I wouldn't have to pay child support. But I don't have any children, so you could say that I've made that, or that I married the right one. Well, I mean, some, you know, stuff happens in marriages. And you're right. If you're making $60,000 a year, I think you're probably in about the 65th percentile of wages, because, you know, 80% of us make under, I forgot what it is, like $75,000 or $80,000 a year. So, and he said he's made a lot of money. But, and I don't, you know, I have no idea what his financial situation is. But, I mean, I think you got to be a little more sympathetic or a little more compassion to understand that people are really hurting. And some people have made bad decisions. I don't know what kind of decisions he's made. Some people have made catastrophic financial decisions about they bought the bill of goods that was sold to them about getting a mortgage. They've bought the American dream on their credit card and they're maxed out on that. And you can say, hey man, you know, it's their own dumb fault. When it has such a mass phenomena to it, when there's tens of millions of people that find themselves in that identical position, it's not just individuals making a bad decision. It's in the, you know, the social structure. Well, we're a little too slow on that one. Thank you. Appreciate it. But come on, let's have some compassion for people, for Christ's sakes. I mean, even if people have made bad errors in judgment, you don't want to say, too bad they lost their house, or too bad they lost their job, or something like that. They should have been smarter. That's that cruel streak that often we find in Americans, that that there is so much of dog-eat-dog in this country. And again, why do we have a dog-eat-dog philosophy when we're in the richest country in the world? If you're the richest country in the world, and that is just the massive amount of wealth that's accumulated here, and a lot of it is because you have a guy like the richest man in New York City, David Koch, who has $17 billion in wealth. You know, when you have a more equitable distribution of wealth in a country, like the northern tier Scandinavian countries, you don't have that kind of awful meanness and cruelty. Now, putting that off on our last caller. I'm not trying to say he was being all that, although, like I say, I don't think he scored very highly on the compassion scale. But when it's almost like this contempt for the loser, and even in a depression, like in the United States, I forgot, we looked that up 1 week. Well, I think the unemployment was 25 or 30%. So, here's the deal that, 75%, you could say, 75% of the people who are unemployed. Screw those ones who don't have jobs. It's their fault. Anybody can get a job if they want one. That's what they used to say. Let's see. All right. Here's Keith from Warren. Keith, you didn't get disconnected. I hung up on you because I'm saying hello, Keith. You're on the air, and you're talking to somebody else.
Oh no, I was talking to your producer there or whatever. Hey, what's going on, Peter?
You're on the air.
All right, cool. I want to talk about Social Security, man.
Sure.
It's like I'm 45 years old, and it's like I'm not planning anything coming out when I get old enough to collect anything. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you should have it.
What's that?
You should have it. You've paid into it all your life so far.
Right. Well, that's what everyone thinks. But you think Social Security is going to be around in 20 years from now?
Well, not the way things are going, and not the way John McCain has plans to, I forgot what his word is. Usually they talk about reforming it, but generally that means it's going to wind up with a lot of money for the people on the high side, and the devil take the people on the other end, right?
Right. Exactly.
Well, here, so let me ask, and I'm not really putting this to you as an individual, but if someone came in your house to break in your house and start stealing your stuff or harming you or your family, you'd fight back pretty hard, I suspect, right?
Right.
And so would I. But we're not fighting back. And now I remember, I didn't say you, I said we. We're not fighting back those people that are robbing us of our, robbing us currently because, you know, when they jack up the oil prices and they make tens of billions of dollars more and we collectively have tens of billions of dollars less. So essentially they've stolen all this money from us. And they're also planning and scheming to rob our future and our security when we become elderly citizens. And, we're just sort of mildly pissed off.
Right, exactly.
So we got to find some ways, and like I say, I don't know what you and I can go do tomorrow to stop this, but we better all find out, or as I haven't said in a few weeks, or we better just thatch our roofs and admit that we're peasants, and we'll just hope that the lords will give us some charity when we become old people. So, when I find out, I'll let you know. And if you find out, let me know. All right, thank you. Actually, I don't mean to make a joke of it. I think it's really important that we stay aware of what's possible. And if you just keep watching Fox News and MSNBC and CNN, you're never going to find out about it. I mean, we've got to start creating those formations at a grassroots level. That's the only thing that's going to save us. And, if you're listening and you're thinking, well, I don't know, man, I got a good job, and yeah, it's good. Gas is a little more, but not so bad. I just went shopping. And in fact, it was cool. Actually, it was cool. On my trip to Cuba, I don't know if I ever told you this, but I went to Cuba in February of this year, and I checked the suitcase in Toronto. That was the last I ever saw of it. Yeah. And it's a long story how I made it through, but I made it through pretty good. But I lost a lot of, valuable stuff. A couple pairs of glasses, you know what glasses cost these days. And a lot of clothing and what have you. So I got paid back by the tour company, which is incredible. I went there as a journalist. Well, I'm permitted to do that. I mean, you can't because you're just an ordinary citizen. Doesn't that suck? And I'm a journalist, and so I can tell you about Cuba, so that makes it okay. But any of it. So they gave me some money, so I went shopping to replace some of this stuff, and I noticed it said everything on sale, 50% and all that. So I looked at this pair of pants, it was $80, and I figured, well, $40 for a pair of pants, it still seems like a lot, I'm old school, but what the hell. So this $80 pair of pants, kind of fancy and all that you wear during the summer, light color, and I take it up to the cash register, $17.99, $18 for this. So, I guess you can do a little shopping now. How did I get off on that? All right, here's Dan in Detroit. Dan, hi, it's Peter Werby. Thanks for joining me. Hey, Dan.
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just had a question. I heard a lot about the these people were complaining about the economy and whatnot and the military and all that stuff, but I really think the problem is that nobody wants to do anything for themselves. They don't want to work. They don't want to do anything. Nobody has any fallback plans. What happened to the time where people were, they were a fireman, but they were, they knew how to do stuff around their houses and this, that, and the other thing. That doesn't seem to exist anymore. They just, they want to do one thing and stick with that one thing.
Didn't you used to think it was more, back in the old days, say the 30s and the 40s, people had one profession, like a fireman or a hat salesman or a cook or a salesman or something like that, and they did that all their life. Now people have 14 jobs before they're 25.
Well, right, but one of those jobs are jobs, not professions.
Right.
What I'm saying is that it seems that the economic standpoint right now is that maybe not an economic standpoint, but as far as society goes, that it seems like everybody wants to turn on a computer and, they want to do things with a click of a mouse instead of getting dirty. And that's what kind of bothers me,
We are turning into a virtual world. I don't know if there's this new film out called Wall-E. Check that out. It kind of speaks to that a little. All right, I got to rush through. Got just a couple minutes left. Thanks for your opinion, Dan. I appreciate it. Steve writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Ask your listeners, living in a religious crazy country like America, what would Jesus say about some people having so much wealth while there is so much need? Well, I think that's pretty obvious. He didn't like that too well. Wait, I got to see what this email is. Robert from Lincoln Park writes, what if Bush is being held hostage by a suitcase bomb and he has to torture his people to meet the terrorist demands, or is he just that evil? All right, let's go back and get your calls here. Here's Matt from Waterford. Hi, Matt. You're on the air.
Hey, what's going on?
Hi.
Well, I was just calling to complain.
Yeah, sure.
My complaint is, everybody out there, you had one caller that said that nobody's trying to do anything, nobody wants to work. Well, I personally feel that everybody's trying to find work, and they're doing everything they can. My profession used to be real estate appraisals, but obviously the real estate market's pretty bad. I've opened up the market to try to get a job anywhere in the country, and I'm still having problems, mainly because I'm young, and there's more suitable appraisers out there that are had more years experience. My fiance has 3 degrees, went to school for 6 years, and she's working retail right now, making $16 an hour.
Wow. I mean, it's amazing she's making $16 an hour. But
yeah, that is pretty good because she's a manager. But
yeah,
that,
you know what?
The matter is.
You know, Matt, during the Great Depression, during the 1930s, people like some of these folks that we've heard tonight were staying, during the 1930s, were saying anybody can get a job that really wants to.
Oh, that's a bunch of junk. You cannot find work, especially in Michigan. And a lot of people say it's mainly Michigan, it's not the other states. And that's a bunch of junk, too, I think. There are jobs out there, and eventually you can find one. I have a friend that's an electrical engineer, and he found a job in Michigan. He's making great money, but it took an awful lot of effort. And it is possible, but...
Well, I'll tell you, union electricians, a couple friends of mine, one guy just was working for the, you know, he's got a family, he's got a, you know, wife and a kid, and he was off in West Virginia working for 2.5 months, and living in a, you know, motel with 3 other guys to a room, and now he just went to the flood area in Iowa, and he's living in a tent doing, I mean, he's a union electrician. All right, I got to get my last caller before our end of the show. Thanks for your opinion. I agree with you completely. Here's Greg in Garden City. Greg, I need it real quick because I got to go home.
Yeah, hi. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Love
Welcome.
The show, man.
Welcome. Thank you so much.
No problem. I just want to call to say the guy that was talking about that, nobody wants to do anything for themselves,
right.
That guy is just completely wrong. I just wanted to get that out there.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Oh,
well, good.
Look, I dropped the phone.
All right. Thank you for listening. Courtney, thank you. Al, thank you. Jalene, I hope you're fast asleep now. She's got to be up, what did she say, 7 o'clock to get ready for her 8:45 rock and roll show. But thanks to all of you for listening and calling. And stay tuned. A pretty interesting interview with singer-songwriter and Native American activist Buffy St. Marie. Also, Tyler Coleman, who's written Wine Politics, How Governments, Environmentalists, Mobsters, and Critics Influence the Wines We Drink. I'm not going to have a glass of wine when I go home, though. Hey, we'll talk next week. Jalene will be back. Thank you.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Take your Kit Kat break and pick up a Kit Kat candy bar with your coffee at your favorite convenience store today.
Break me up a piece of that Kit Kat bar.
You know, we all know someone who owns their own business or is self-employed and can't afford health insurance, right? Well, I know someone firsthand that not only is affordable and trustworthy, but who will be on top of your needs and will work with you through the entire process. I'm talking about Mike Kay from Health Insurance Giant. He has hundreds of plans that will work for you. He shops the entire country for the best programs and the lowest prices. The reality is he's working for you. Mike's not some big conglomerate that you can never get through to when you need help. There's always somebody there to help you. They'll schedule appointments around your availability. In fact, Mike will even come to your home. Mike can save you money with a custom plan for your health insurance needs. He's helped thousands of hardworking people, and they can help you. Give Mike a call today at 866-91-GIANT or click on healthinsurancegiant.com. Don't wait. Call now. 866-91-GIANT. Let Mike save you thousands of dollars. Because life is good when you're covered.
Hi, I'm Adam Helfand from HireItDone.com. Most homeowners don't know where to go today to find an honest contractor. Well, I have the answer for you. It's HireItDone.com. If you live in Metro Detroit and you're thinking of fixing up your home, then you need to visit HireItDone.com right now and let my pre-screened contractors compete for your business. Are you looking for new energy-efficient windows? Or perhaps a roof that won't leak? How about the big addition with a custom kitchen and granite countertops? Or just an honest, trustworthy handyman? All you have to do is remember this. Visit HireItDone.com.
As your HD radio continues to develop, you're bound to discover iTunes tagging. It's something we all do sooner or later, some more than others. Some people tag hundreds of times a day. It's just a way to bookmark a song to your iPod so you can download it later. It's simple, and it's completely natural. It's HD radio.
iTunes tagging for your car now from Alpine. For HD radios at Apple and Best Buy, check the buyer's guide on HDradio.com. It's time to upgrade.
These days, people aren't used to getting a lot for their dollar. It just seems like you get less and pay more for everything. Well, at Hungry Howie's, we're changing all that with our Summer Sensation Combos. Summer Sensations are the fresher way to get more for your money with four delicious combos, like three small pizzas with two toppings each, or one large two-topping pizza with 16 pieces of Howie bread and a 2 liter of Pepsi for just $15. That's less than $4 each to feed a family of four. Plus, at Howie's, you get your choice of 8 free flavored crusts. You don't have to resort to the drive-thru just to make your dollar stretch. Get a lot for a little the better way with oven-fresh pizza. Now, is everyone picking up what I'm putting down? Good. So get to Hungry Howie's and pick up a summer sensation for just $15. Hungry Howie's, where we make them fresh, we make them fast, and we make them just for you. Tax, bottle, deposit, delivery, extra. Participating locations. Visit whatcostsareyou.com.
This is a real estate auction alert. Williams & Williams, the largest real estate auction firm in the U.S., is selling over 80 homes in Michigan this month. Sales begin July 11th with nominal opening bids starting as low as $1,000. Many properties are available for online bidding. For immediate information, text the word Detroit to 23333, or you can visit williamsauction.com. That's williamsauction.com, or call 800-801-8003.
I was born for adventure.
I was born to lead.
I was born to help people.
I was born to be a National Guard soldier.
Because I'm a doer.
Because I want to serve.
It's a WRIF Motor City Riffs local music showcase at New York, New York, and Chesterfield. It all happens this Saturday night with WRIF's Jack of Rock, Doug Bodell, with Detroit's own The Orbitons live on stage. Always the best local rock of the deep. The Motor City Riffs local music showcase at New York, New York, inside the Premier Entertainment Complex, 23 miles, just 2 miles east of I-94 in Chesterfield, with 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.
McGruff the Crime Dog here with my nephew Scruff. Here's the address for my new free comic activity book.
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
It shows kids what to know about guns and drugs and bullies and strangers. And it's got games and puzzles, too. Write it down now.
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ad Council.
Let your voice be heard loud and proud. Or at least until your local code enforcement Nazis crack down on you.
What almost happened to you to get this?
I got 2 more days. I have to take the sign down and or get a code violation from the city of Roseville.
Roger doesn't care. It's for the Riff and Kid Rock.
The WRIF street team is scouring the neighborhoods of metropolitan Detroit for your Kid Rock for Summer 08 sign.
Well, my name is Roger. I want tickets to all summer long with Kid Rock and WRIF.
Proudly post your Kid Rock sign and you can win tickets courtesy of the Riff to one of Kid Rock's 4 shows at DTE this summer. So if your local code enforcement doofus harasses you, you look him straight in the eye and say, "See here, Milo, I am winning those free tickets for Kid Rock, and I'm not going to take this from you." Get your Kid Rock signs up. You never know when the WRAF street team will be paying you a visit. So you can party all summer long with Kid Rock and 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here. A pleasure to be with you, and what a pleasure to bring to our microphone someone whose music and whose activism and whose whole life I've just admired for so long. It's Buffy St. Marie. She's the Canadian First Nations musician. She's a singer-songwriter, a composer, a visual artist, an educator, a social activist. Just so many things have made up Buffy St. Marie's life that I almost found it difficult where to begin to ask her questions, but probably I'll just begin by saying, welcome, Buffy St. Marie. It's a pleasure to have you on the air with me.
Oh, thank you, Peter. It's going to be great to be in Detroit again, too. It's been a long time.
And that's right. You are going to be here Thursday, July 17th. You're going to be performing with the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. It's all part of the Concert of Colors, this free, marvelous concert going over 4 days down at Orchestra Hall. You're going to be performing with one of the premier orchestras in the United States. Why did you choose that? Because when you were here in 2000, you were with a band.
Yes, and I'll be with my band again, but we were invited to perform with the DSO, so I didn't have to hesitate. I said, yes, please.
And who, it was the concert people, the people put on the Concert of Colors, it was their idea?
I think so. I think it probably was. You know, I had done the Concert of Colors before, along with Bo Diddley and several other acts, and I really admire what they do. Michigan has always been a good place for, you know, in my heart, just because there are so many foundations, so many people involved with diversity and the positivity of making good changes and helping the world along. So I kind of have a soft spot in my heart for Michigan.
Now, it's not unusual for you to perform with an orchestra. I don't know. I mean, some of your recordings, your many recordings, you've had big music in back of you, right?
From time to time, yeah. Almost every album of mine, you know, I've got a whole lot of albums, ever since the 60s has been really diverse in style, because as a songwriter, I just kind of write it the way I hear it in my head, and so I've had country music hits and lots of things that sounded like folk music, songs of social conscience like Universal Soldier, Now That the Buffalo's Gone, things that sound like they're happening on a reservation like Star Walker, and I have a new album coming out in the fall, so my music is always very diverse. It's not just one style, and I don't know, that's just kind of the way my life is, and like a lot of songwriters, I feel like a camera, you know, and I reflect whatever's going on, and I love life, and it's been very good to me.
Now, your new CD, and we're going to be playing a song from it, Running for the Drum, that's what's not going to be out for a while, or is that out now, and you're going to have another one out?
No, it's coming out in the fall.
Okay.
And, well, we've been waiting to put it out. It's been ready since spring, but in Canada, I have a real hot bio documentary out. It's called Buffy St. Marie, Multimedia Life. And we decided to package them together, and it was running on Bravo, and now it's running on APTN. So we have to wait for the TV right to finish, and then we're going to put it out with the new album, Running for the Drum.
Buffy St. Marie, if we looked at your life, kind of one of those graphs, like our economy, of course, ours is just going down now. But your prominence, beginning in the early 1960s and shooting way up, and then suddenly you disappear, and then you reappear, and has it been a roller coaster? Or has it been planned?
Oh, a little bit of both, I think. In the United States, people think that I disappeared, but in the rest of the world, they don't feel that way, because I sort of had the pleasure of getting kicked out by a by a presidential administration who we didn't know it at the time, but there were certain artists who were simply gagged. You know, we were kind of held underwater for about 4 hours, and you're dead in the record business for a very long time after that. You know, Eartha Kitt went through it, Taj Mahal went through it, I went through it, only I didn't know it for about 10 years. And then radio broadcasters came and live on the air apologized to me for having been part of the Lyndon Johnson blacklisting of certain artists. And I wasn't aware of it. I got my FBI files. Of course, that you don't learn anything because there's all crossed out with magic marker, but I did sit there and read it and realize, oh my gosh, it's true. And then last year, you know, it got even more complicated, because last year there was an article that first came out in Indian Country Today. You can find it online. It's called Buffy's Censored Sounds, and even the CIA was in on it, and there's a CIA agent who came out and you know, admitted to having helped to drown my career and that of other social activism-minded people especially the ones who did not have big management. I mean, mm-hmm. I didn't have big management and, you know, sharks protecting my water. And it was really a surprise to me that that had gone on. And I don't think most people were aware of it.
Were you angry or proud or both?
I mean, neither one. I was baffled.
Really?
And all during these years, you know, I've had such an incredible career in different countries, and people have been, you know, real aware of my continuing music. But I think in the U.S., people think that I disappeared in the 60s and then reemerged for 5 years on Sesame Street. And that is true, because I never gave up on having an audience in the U.S. I just took my message elsewhere. You know, my messages have always been music, positivity, fun, Native American rights, social activism, peace. And it was such an incredible welcome, Matt, to have Sesame Street invite me to share their stage. So for 5.5 years, I was a cast member with Sesame Street with the same messages that I had done for, you know, people of my own peer group in the 60s.
Mm-hmm. Have you been performing Universal Soldier all along? I mean, you're going to perform it with your DSO performance on July 17th here as part of Concert of Colors.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, no, I've been performing it all along. And I think, I know I had a wonderful welcome last time at the Concert of Colors in Detroit, and I was surprised, you know, because there were a lot of people who knew not only the music from the 60s, but they knew my Academy Award song, Up Where We Belong, and they also, you know, there's a big Native American population in Detroit. They were very much aware of Starwalker, et cetera. So it's not as though I have been absent or invisible, to go on to the Tonight Show and be told not to sing certain songs, and to show up at concerts and have the records not have arrived at the stores. You know, it really cuts you off from the major public. Although as an artist, I don't feel I've suffered. I've continued to have a wonderful career and reached a lot of people.
Oh, you sure have. And your songs have been performed by so many people. I was looking at the list here. Chet Atkins, Janis Joplin, Taj Mahal, Until It's Time for You to Go has been recorded by Elvis and Barbara Streisand, Neil Diamond, even the Boston Pops Orchestra. I'm looking at all this. Roberta Flack, Cher, Bobby Darin. This is amazing.
It's a fair whack of people.
Yeah. Do you have any favorites when you, I mean, do you, well, let me put just between you and me. I guess a few other people are listening, but do you ever, when you hear one of your songs performed, do you ever wince, or are you always happy with the
No, but it used to scare me, you know, when I was just coming up, you know, all of a sudden I was rich and famous, you know, in my early 20s, and I was a young singer with too much money, and I started a scholarship foundation, and then people started recording my songs, and things got very, very good for me, but it used to bother me to hear somebody do the song a little bit different, you know, or to change the melody or the words. And then, you know, after a while, I just thought about it differently. What an incredible compliment. How wonderful that somebody else would like one of my songs enough to bring it into their lives and, you know, learn it and teach it to the musicians and record it. So I'm really, I just treasure the recordings that other artists have done for any of my songs, and especially Until It's Time for You to Go. I mean, that's a good one for me, because that's earned me enough money so that I didn't have to have a full-time day job.
Okay.
It's allowed me to remain an artist, writing records and recording at home. You know, I was very, very early into electronic music and digital music and digital art. And most of it was because I had enough money to have my studio at home very, very early,
mm-hmm.
and create records that could go anywhere in the world. Even though I was, not welcome in the U.S., I was welcome just about everywhere else.
Well, Buffy St. Marie, I'm probably going to totally embarrass myself by saying I've always been a star-struck fan of yours from the earliest days. And even though I don't think I've heard the album, was it your first album with Universal Soldier and After the Buffalo Have Gone?
Yes, Now the Buffalo's Gone.
Now that the Buffalo, yeah. And I can hear those in my brain. I might have not even heard them in, you know, the album in 10 years or so, but they're extraordinarily powerful. And they had
and there are some things on YouTube, too, that I just I'm just rocking with laughter sometimes seeing some of the old songs, but some of the songs that are really songs of conscience. You know, there's one called "My Country, 'Tis of Thy People You're Dying," which is really a hard hitting song, and Pete Seeger welcomed it on his Rainbow Quest television show, and it was just my it was my attempt to give audiences, especially non-Indian audiences, a chance to have Indian 101, you know, because there was so little Native American history being taught in public schools. Even today, people who are interested in Native American everything, you know, history, geography, science, social studies, might want to go to my Cradle Board Teaching Project website, because the curriculum is all there. It's all for free, and we're offering core curriculum through Native American perspectives, and it's real good for, you know, just web surfers who have a little interest in Native American stuff. But it matches content standards for schools, too, for elementary, middle, and high school grades. And we had great support. I'm very, very thankful in mentioning the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, who gave us great, great support in bringing the Cradle Board Teaching Project to thousands and thousands and thousands of students. Every year, the foundation runs itself, and it's all free for learners.
All right, and I will have that on my website as well. I went to creativenative.com, creative-native.com. Is that a good place to start?
That's my own website. So that's my professional website. It has you know, you can download songs, and my digital art is represented there, and you know, their biography and all the normal show business things, a big discography and stuff. But the cradleboard.org website is different. That's an educational website for schools and people who want to learn.
I'll have that on my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerbe.com as well. I'll have all of this so people can hook into that if they've missed any of that. I want to play one of the songs from the new CD, and this is great. I thought it was out, so I didn't realize we've got kind of a preview here. But
yes, Nico.
one final question before we play a song, and that's recently the Prime Minister of Canada, Stephen Harper, and I compliment myself for knowing that. I would say probably one out of every 100 Americans could name the Canadian Prime Minister. He apologized to the Native people of Canada from having forced children to attend Christian schools and relinquish their Native heritage. Were you pleased with that? I mean, it played well in the press. Sometimes there's a backstory, though.
I am so impressed that you would know this. On the day of the apology, I was flying into Ottawa. So the next morning I woke up and all the coverage was everywhere, the newspapers, radio, television. It's such an important step for government to have taken, because for 40 years we've been working to remedy the horrible, horrible things that were done with three generations of children taken out of homes, placed in foster homes, never to see their families again, put into residential schools where they were abused and used as toys. These people that you see sometimes in the streets of Canada, you know, looking bad, you know, looking poor, living in poverty, people who have grown up without parents or grandparents or families, and who consequently don't know how to parent their own children. I mean, it's been such a sad long haul, and to have the government of Canada just step up to the plate and say, yes, indeed, this did happen, and yes, indeed, an apology must be made. It's really a first step, I think, in, I don't know, you know, some people will never be healed from that, but, you know, the country itself, to be able to address hard issues, that's the way you start to build a future.
Sure, and if you think it was from a conservative prime minister, no less. But
yes.
Before time gets away from us, and I want to play a couple of songs, you choose the one from your brand new CD that's coming out in the fall, Running for the Drum. It's going to appear at the same time as a, how would we describe this? It's Buffy St. Maria Multimedia Life. It,
Yeah, it's a biodocumentary that's been running on Bravo Canada for the past year or so, and now it's on APTN, which is another network, Aboriginal People's Television Network, a huge network in Canada. I wish we had one in the States.
Can we get one? Can we get that? Is there any way to...
You know, you probably can. You probably can. I'm just not sure. You might be able to catch it in Detroit, at least.
Yeah, okay.
But it's a big network. Anyway, we're going to release the CD along with A Multimedia Life, the DVD, which is my biodocumentary. It's not only a retrospective, but it's also a contemporary look of the stuff that I'm doing now and my involvement with a lot of interesting things. So they'll be released together in the fall. And the song I think that you and I decided on, Peter, is called, it has a Canadian word, Keshagesh. Keshagesh means greedy guts. And it's what you'd call a little puppy who eats his own and everybody else's. And it really is about greed and the environment. And it's a little, you know, shake your finger and slap the wrist of the guys who are trying to own and control everything. So it's called No, No, Keshagesh. You can't do that no more.
All right, let's give it a spin. Buffy St. Marie on the Peter Werby Show. Performance with the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. The date is Thursday, July 17th, and it's the kickoff concert for the Concert of Colors. This will be July 17th through the 20th. All of it will be at the world-famous Orchestra Hall, and for a whole set of events, you can go to concertofcolors.org as well.
I'd also like to praise those people who have been running Concert of Colors for all these years. You know, they work with lots of other foundations, too, and Michigan is so great for charitable foundations. But the people who run the Concert of Colors work year-round to help youth and they're really, really positive directions, lots of diversity, people from many, many cultures who live in and around the Detroit area. So please come out and support them. You'll see a wonderful show with me and the Detroit Symphony Orchestra, and I'm looking forward to it so, so much.
Yeah, and like the Bonnaroo Festival, I just talked to somebody that attended that in Tennessee. It was $250 for the weekend. That was only 2 days, and this is absolutely free, absolutely free. So,
yeah, they do a great job.
It is totally amazing. Tell us a little more about, is it proper to say Native American? I noticed in some of your bios that it referred to you as a Native American. I mean, we talk about North America, of course, but the Canadian Native people, they now, some of it, they have this tens of thousands of square miles that have been ceded to them up in the Northwest Territories, right?
It's not exactly ceded to them. They owned it in the first place.
There you go. Well, they got it right. Sorry, stolen land given back.
Something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, in Canada we use, for some groups of people who have treaties, we say First Nations, we say Aboriginal. In the U.S., often people will say Native American, people will say Indian, people will say Indigenous, and, you know, most of us skins, we don't care. and especially, you know, because we predate the border, we don't think about it too much. I mean, it's important for red tape and paperwork, but, you know, in many areas of the arts, Native Americans, Native North Americans are thriving and making incredible music, recordings, dance, artwork. So it's a very happening scene. This summer we're also going to be at what's called Indian Market in Santa Fe, which is the biggest market for Native American art in the world. So that happens in August. So the Indian art scene is very big, very happening, and very, very beautiful.
It is in Santa Fe, I can attest. They have some galleries that have the most incredible stuff. Sculpture,
yeah.
Paintings, whole lots of stuff.
Yeah.
You're one of the songs and it is that you're known for is Universal Soldier. That's part of your collection called Up Where We Belong. And you've been singing that a long time, and doesn't look like things have gotten any better. I mean, I'm right there with you. I've been humming it right along with you, and sometimes even in talks, I've used some of the final lines from it when people talk about the responsibility for conflicts and wars. I somehow don't get any sense of discouragement in your voice, though.
No. No, I'm not discouraged with the human race. I think the human race is young. I think we're immature. And I think about every 35 years, the citizenry goes to sleep. And a bunch of gobbledygreeds decide to to create a war. I think it's basic, just money laundering 101, you know, get the boys out of town and then loot the domestic economy. I mean, I have a very hard opinion of war. I don't think it's about ideals and protecting anything. I think it's about money. And I'm very, very proud of our generation, Peter. You know, we did help to stop a war. We did put Lyndon Johnson out of business. However, there's one very important thing that we failed to do, which we still need to do. You know, in North America, we have five very heavily funded, excellent colleges of war. We have Annapolis, West Point, the Army College of War. We have the Air Force Academy in Canada, the Royal Military Academy. And we don't have one college of peace of that caliber or of that funding. So if a young person, you know, is looking for a career, it's much, much easier to find a lucrative career in making war. But how can they even support themselves in learning how to make peace if we don't educate them and teach them the real basics in our world of alternative conflict resolution, yeah?
Sure. And unfortunately, we're out of time, but I think it would be appropriate to go out with the song Universal Soldier, which you are going to sing at Orchestra Hall?
I certainly am. Yep, mm-hmm. We're going to do it.
Well, please join Buffy St. Marie and a host of other performers, all free. Buffy St. Marie with the Detroit Symphony Orchestra kicks off the Concert of Colors Thursday, July 17th. It's Orchestra Hall down in the south of the Cultural Center. And I just want to thank you so much for being with me. It's been a real pleasure. And I'll certainly see you again on July 17th.
I'll be there.
And he's 6 feet four. He fights with missiles and with spears. He's all 31 and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist, and a Baptist, and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada, he's fighting for France, he's fighting for the USA, and he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan. And he thinks we'll put an end to war this way. And he's fighting for democracy. He's fighting for the Reds. He says it's for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to live and who's to die. And he never sees the writing on the walls. But without him, have condemned him at the helm. Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He is the one who gives his body as a weapon to the war. And without him, all this killing can't go on. He is the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. But his orders come from far away no more. They come from him and you and me. And brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put an end to war.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Shinedown returns. Shinedown with special guest Theory of a Dead Man and Blackstone Cherry, July 26th at the Fillmore Detroit. Tickets available right now at all Ticketmaster outlets. But keep your radio locked at 101 WRIF for the most free tickets for Shinedown, interviews with the band, and more.
Hey, what's up? This is Brent from Shinedown, and you're rocking with 101 WRIF.
The rare.
Hey, Dad.
What?
Can you get the ketchup bottle open?
Here, let me try. Here you go.
Thanks.
You don't have to be a hero to be a hero. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Mom?
Dad?
How long should I wait for you?
Mom?
If I'm at soccer practice.
What if something happens? Will you come get me?
There's no reason not to have a plan in case of an emergency.
Mom, if you're not home, should we go to the neighbor's house?
And some extremely good reasons why you should.
Can you tell me?
Everybody should have a plan. Take 5 minutes to talk about where you'll meet and how you'll get in touch with each other in an emergency. For other things you can do to be prepared, visit www.ready.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Some people think the youth of today are a lost cause, have misplaced priorities, and are too afraid to stand out and make a difference. But young people all over America are challenging this perspective with the help of World Vision. They're showing they care by going without food for 30 hours. They're saving the lives of others, and in the process, changing their own lives in a profound way.
Support our young people in this effort. Find out how you can help. Call 800-7-FAMINE or go to 30hourfamine.org.
This just in.
Free Gas Wednesday. All day this Wednesday. 101. WRIF will be giving you chances to win free gas on the air.
Even lock on 101 The Rip for your shot at a $101 gas card.
Plus, you'll qualify for the grand prize. A Rip gas card valued at $1,000. It's Free Gas Wednesday. This Wednesday from 101. WRIF.
Energy Hog the team. Infiltrate the house and waste some energy.
No problem. It's got leaky windows
and no added insulation.
Perfect. Now go wild and waste some wattage.
The Mitchell House, a house like many others, except this one's under attack by energy hogs. They show up anywhere energy's being wasted.
Talk to me, hogs.
The washer, it's not Energy Star rated.
Outstanding. What about the thermostat?
Not programmable.
Looks like we're living high on the hog.
Only one person has the power to get rid of energy hogs. You.
Hold on. Someone's home.
Andy's got energy-efficient light bulbs.
To find out how you can fight energy hogs, log on to energyhog.org. You'll find fun games and lots of tips on making your home more energy efficient.
Now he's installing Energy Star appliances.
Not Energy Star. That's it. Get out of there. I'll get you, energyhog.org.
Hey, wait for me.
Brought to you by the Alliance to Save Energy, the Department of Energy, and the Ad Council.
What would you do if you had to choose between the buffalo and the giraffes, between a flower or an elephant? What would you choose? What if you had to decide between a 100-year-old tree and a 1,000,000-year-old beach? Between drinking clean water or breathing clean air? Would you make the right choice? Would there be a right choice? Now there's a way to help. Not just one, but all these things. EarthShare, the world's leading environmental groups working together. It's one choice we can all live with.
This ad sponsored by Ad Council and EarthShare.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much, and welcome to the broadcast. Peter Werby here with you. Someone once said to me, I think it was a listener who said, can you really make something political out of everything or anything? And I said, yeah. I wasn't even sure what they would bring up, but it's easy to do with this subject about wine. I mean, think wine, politics and wine? There can't be any politics in wine. Not only is there politics in wine, that's the name of a brand new book from the University of California Press. It's called Wine Politics, How Governments, Environmentalists, Mobsters, and Critics Influence the Wines We Drink. The author is Tyler Coleman, and Tyler Coleman teaches wine classes at New York University and the University of Chicago. He contributed the third edition of the Oxford Companion to Wine, and his articles have appeared in Food and Wine and Wine and Spirits. And Tyler Coleman, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you very much, Peter. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
And if I reached you in New York City, I forgot to ask you.
Yes, I live just outside New York.
But you get to the University of Chicago to teach wine, huh?
That's right. I used to live in Chicago. I did my PhD at Northwestern University, and I started teaching some classes at the U of C there in the adult education continuing studies program. And so but then I moved to New York 3 years ago, but they wanted to continue the offering, so now they fly me back, and I do three or four Saturday seminars a year there.
Oh. Well, wine is something many of us drink, I know, and it has different reputations among different segments of the population, so it also has a real cultural aspect to it, doesn't it, in terms of socioeconomic class and a lot of other aspects.
Absolutely. It's a fantastically multifaceted beverage. It absolutely has a cultural component to it. I mean, in an era of globalization where many products are outsourced to other countries, wine remains from a certain place, from a certain bend in a river, whether that's a river in Michigan or a river in France, and then it's bottled. The grapes are grown there, the wine is made from those grapes, and then it's bottled. And so it's a really neat way of encapsulating a certain place.
Well, 30 or 40 years ago, to talk about Michigan wines or Ohio wines or New York State wines, it was like, ugh. Those were horrible, but everybody's been able to manufacture fairly decent wines, haven't they?
Well, to a certain extent, yeah, that's true.
Drinkable. Let's say drinkable.
Yes, drinkable, yeah. And actually, wine is tremendously popular in America right now, and we've seen the consumption of wine rise for 15 consecutive years in America, and we're going to be actually the number one wine-consuming country, depending on who you ask, either next year or within 2 or 3 years. But so we're going to actually displace France and Italy for that top spot. Along with that tremendous boost in demand has also come an increase in supply from domestic wineries. And so now, by one calculation, there are about 5,000 wineries in America now, and the growth rate is truly phenomenal. In a lot of states outside of California, because California produces 90% of American wine, and so the other 49 states now are starting to produce a lot of wine too. And so yeah. And that wine is often in some cases it's quite good. In some cases it's quite drinkable.
Mm-hmm. Well, in some quarters, and that's what I was partly thinking of, culture and economic class. Wine is thought of as sort of a feat. We have these thin-stemmed glasses, and one takes a big of it. And on the other hand, some people are just chugging out of the bottle some 20% stuff with, what is it? They actually add a little alcohol to it. But it almost seems like somehow I can't imagine drinking. I drink a lot of wine. In fact, I'd say I drink wine almost every day with our dinner. But I can't imagine drinking it at a ball game, although I think people probably do some places.
Yeah, as you say, wine can, the neat thing about wine, because it is so multifaceted, it can appeal to a lot of different people. And wine in France and in Europe more generally has appealed to peasants, and it's appealed to kings. And so it's tremendously multifaceted. And, you know, some wines are produced in bulk and slake the thirst of a lot of people, and other wines are produced in more limited quantities and can just be poured, in royal courts and their modern-day equivalents. It is a really neat beverage because it can really span the spectrum. As far as wine at ballparks, I think there are a few now, particularly in California, that pour
sure.
that pour wine. So, and I myself actually enjoyed some wines at Yankee Stadium last summer in a press event that I attended. But it was an interesting challenge trying to pair wine with hot dogs.
There you go. Tyler Coleman's my guest. His book is Wine Politics, How Governments, Environmentalists, Mobsters, and Critics Influence the Wines We Drink. We're going to get to that because I think that's in many ways the meat of it. But I want to kind of form the basis of our conversation here. Now, one of the things that always astounds people, of course, is that you can go to Trader Joe and get two-buck chuck, which I think now is $3. Or you can spend hundreds of dollars on a bottle of wine. And I'm sure you saw, in fact, living in New York, here in Detroit, I got the New York Times article in the food section about where they, I think it was Eric Asimov, isn't he? He's their wine, one of their wine critics.
Chief wine critic, yeah.
Yeah, and he reported on this study that said when you gave people blind taste tests, like myself, who's not a professional or not a aficionado to the extent that my nose is really there, that it was all over the board. Some people liked $4 bottles of wine better than $125 bottles of wine. So there's a suspicion that this is, in some quarters at least, that this is all a bunch of baloney and snobbery and what have you. Of why spend $30 on a bottle of wine when you can go to Trader Joe and get a decent Merlot for, $5?
Right, right. It's certainly true that there is not a one-to-one price to quality ratio, and so that what I mean by that is to say that just because a wine is $50 doesn't make it necessarily better than a wine that's $15. And so
I noticed you didn't go down to the 4 or 5.
But, right. Well,
but go ahead.
No, it's a difficult market these days for under $10 wines in general, just because so many of the good values have come from overseas, and I think that's still true. But now with the U.S. dollar not faring so well in currency markets, it makes more of a challenge. And also, of course, the rising cost of fuel affects everything, and wine included, because it's a heavy product when it's bottled in glass bottles, and it has to be transported a long way from California to Michigan. It's a long truck journey.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just because a bottle of wine costs more doesn't mean that it tastes better, and that's I think the key point. But is a good bottle of wine that is expensive better than just something that's where the winemaker hasn't put a lot of effort into making it particularly expressive of the place that it was grown and the grape that it came from? It's going to offer more reward in that regard. So it's not clear, and a lot of it, of course, comes down to personal preference too. I've certainly done a lot of tastings. I love to throw Ringer wines in my tastings, and the one I did recently, I poured a $125 bottle of wine and a $15 bottle of wine, and the favorite was, in fact, the $15 bottle of wine. So,
well, that same article said that the people that were in the business and tasted wines regularly actually were hit it every time. I mean, they could distinguish
right.
the finer wine. I used to say, a long time ago, I suppose I haven't told this joke in a while, that I'm a connoisseur of wine, the connoisseur they pour cheap wine down. But I know a friend of mine who's in the wine industry and travels the world and said he was going to listen to this broadcast. He brought me from Syria, where he's writing on wine and food in that area. Hi, David.
Oh, wow, how neat.
He one time said to me, he said, "Do you taste?" And he named the qualities that were suggested to him that he could smell and taste. I said, "I don't know, David. Tastes like wine to me." So, what is there in the palate? Is it a discriminating palate? Is it experience? Is it worth it?
Is it worth it? Yeah. Well, I think it is worth it, absolutely. And the best way to become a better taster is simply to taste more wine. And there are lots of ways to do that. One is that stores can sometimes offer free tastings in stores, or classes or events or something. And so those types of events where you can taste a lot of different wines side by side can help you really sharpen your palate and think about what it is that you like in a certain wine.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you could have dinner parties with friends, and pick a certain grape or a certain region, and have a few people over, and have everybody bring a different wine. And that way, you can reduce the costs of tasting eight wines. Say, if you have eight people at your party, and everybody brings one different bottle, then that way you only have to pay for one bottle and get to taste eight. So, and have a good time while you're doing it.
Good idea. Well, Tyler Coleman, we haven't gotten really to the title of your book, Wine Politics. I'm kind of just educating myself on wine itself, and there's a lot in this book as well, including a history of wine and growing in the United States, and terrific information. But the subtitle of Wine Politics is how governments, environmentalists, mobsters, and critics influence the wine we drink. The most provocative one, of course, is mobsters. How in the world do mobsters influence the wines that you and me drink?
Well,
you and I guess it is. There you go. Go ahead.
Yeah, The mobster's reference in the title is a largely historical one, because I wanted to flag the importance of the chapter of prohibition in the American wine story. And for 14 years, it was illegal, completely illegal, to make or consume or buy wine in the United States, something that would be hard for us to think about today since we're in such a bull market for wine.
Mm-hmm.
But that period of prohibition has had such an important impact on the American wine industry, both from the production aspects, because the production vineyards and knowledge about winemaking were tremendously degraded during the prohibition, but also on the distribution aspects. So simply getting the wine from the winery to the consumer in Michigan is still affected today by the repeal of prohibition. The way the prohibition was repealed 75 years ago, 1933, and so the driving force at the repeal of prohibition was to limit the power of organized crime because of their tremendous influence during the prohibition. Al Capone and the rum runners,
mm-hmm.
and And so what the compromise that was worked out at the federal level was that states could set their own rules and regulations. And so each of the states set up rules that separated producers, distributors, and retailers. And so those are the three tiers of wine distribution in the United States. And so it's horizontally segmented industry. And so Dell Computer can manufacture a computer and sell it to you directly, but XYZ Winery in California can't sell directly to a lot of consumers in America. And so this was actually the case, an important part of and Michigan plays an important part in changing this rule. And so actually some some residents of Troy, Ray and Eleanor Held, actually brought a suit that went all the way to the Supreme Court. And in 2005, the Supreme Court ruled that they couldn't be barred from ordering wine directly from wineries out of state, while they could order wine from in-state wineries. And so they told the Michigan and the other 49 states that they had to comply and they couldn't have this dual standard for out-of-state shipments and in-state shipments. And so actually, after a bit of finagling and log rolling, the Michigan powers that be decided to open up the state, and so now residents of Troy and Detroit can order wines directly from out-of-state wineries as well as in-state wineries. There is a cap per year that the wineries can send to Michigan residents in total. But that was an important step in sort of altering the power structure and being able to have more choice in wines. Because of course, when you don't have choice, the wines have to go through this three-tier system, producer, distributor, retailer, then the selection is going to be worse and the prices are likely to be higher.
Mm-hmm. As I know you know, in the Prohibition period, that much wine and liquor was brought in from Canada, of course, right across the river and right across Lake St. Clair. And during the winter months, they used to, when it was very cold and Lake St. Clair would freeze, they would drive cars across and they would take the doors off because they were always fearful about falling through, right? But there was an amazing amount brought in. The book is Wine Politics, How Governments, Environmentalists, Mobsters, and Critics Influence the Wine We Drink. How do us environmentalists affect that? I know there are some, now I can't remember what you see on it. What is it? Organic, yeah, it just says, like organic wine. Those never seem like the best, though, somehow to me.
Yeah. Well, it depends how they're made, really. And so, but there's a tremendous awareness about green issues generally today, and a lot of people want to eat organically grown foods. And so, organically grown wines are things that people are looking for a little bit more these days. And the trouble is that with the U.S. Regulations on organic labeling, that we can't, it's not so easy to put organic wine on the label because, and this may be, you know, a little bit technical, but it's actually the issue of sulfites.
Mm-hmm.
And so the back label says contains sulfites.
Right.
And
what's that for?
Well, sulfites are an antioxidant, and so they're a natural preservative. And
okay.
So the enemy of wine is oxygen, and so it'll turn wine into vinegar very quickly. And so by adding a tiny amount of sulfites, wineries can stabilize the wine for shipping. And just to give it a little bit more preservation. And so anyway, some people do have very strong reactions to sulfites, and they will get tremendous headaches and have respiratory problems and things. And so that's why the label, the warning is there on the label. But most people don't have any reaction at all. In fact, if you're curious, if you have a reaction to sulfites, you can eat some dried fruit, like dried apricots or something like that, because those are preserved with sulfites too.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, have far higher levels than any bottle of wine has in it. So anyway,
the environmentalists, though. I mean, people that is there an active role that some of the environmental groups play, or is this just refer to people who? Okay, go ahead then.
Yeah. No. And so actually. in two ways. They have an effect. The first is that specifically in Napa Valley, environmentalists have made it very difficult to increase the vineyard acreage there. And so what I talk about in the book is I tell the story of wine in France and America through the lens of industry politics. And so some outsiders critique France for being bureaucratic and stuck in their perhaps bureaucracy and tradition and things. And, you know, there's a lot of validity to that. I think that the French system definitely needs an overhaul and a good kick in the pants. But they make very good wines as well. But the United States also has limits on things. It's often held up as a free market society, but there are limits. And they're the foremost in the wine industry that limits are these distribution rules that I was talking about earlier, the three-tier system. But there's also limits on the production side, and the environmentalists in Napa have shown that, because now there's effectively a moratorium on new vineyard plantings in Napa Valley based on environmental claims. And so that's one way. Another way is that the winemakers themselves are becoming much more green. And so you see a lot of wineries in California adding solar panels and turning away from chemicals in the vineyard and trying to look for organic solutions to pests and problems. And so I talk about some of the wineries that have had problems, for example, with pests eating the vines. And what they would have done in the olden days is to use chemical sprays, but now what they do is they think about, well, what's that pest and who eats that pest? And then they bring in they try and attract what are called beneficial insects that eat the problem insects. And so it's more of a sustainable solution to environmental issues. And I think that when winemakers take a lot of care like that, that then the result is making better wines. And so that's how environmentalism, I see it having an effect in the wine industry.
There's a little sidebar to all of this as well, environmental concerns, and that is the cork in the bottle. I'm always surprised that they're able to find enough cork in the world to stopper the bottles. I know sometimes you're increasingly finding plastic corks, and it used to be that you could see a cheap bottle of wine, something that the classic quote wino would be drinking. They would have a screw top, but right. There is a move back towards screw top. Tell us a little about cork and the reintroduction of the screw top.
Absolutely. So cork is actually a piece of tree bark, and so it's grown in a type of oak tree that has particularly thick bark, and it's particularly found in the Iberian Peninsula, mostly in Portugal, but also a little bit of Spain. And so the Portuguese actually control most of the world's cork production, and so they are enthusiastic about keeping it going. But in the past 20 years, there's been a discovery that the cork that closed the bottle actually caused some problems. What we colloquially call the bottle to be corked or off. That the chemical reaction with the cork and the wine can cause some bottles to be off. And you'll notice that when I teach classes, people are like, "Oh, great, can we try a corked wine?" And I'm like, "Well, if I knew what a corked wine was, you know, I'd know how to stop it." So, but we usually end up finding a bottle of corked wine throughout the period of the class, and because the rate is could be as high as about one bottle per case of wines that are corked, and so. When I say this, I mean wines that are off. And so that has been a tremendous problem. A 10% failure rate in another industry would, you know, put the company out of business, basically. And so as a result, some producers have moved away from cork because of this problem, and now are using these synthetic closures, including screw caps. And I don't think screw caps are a problem at all. I think they're great because they eliminate this problem of a wine being off by the chemical reaction with the cork that can happen at a frustratingly high rate. One problem, though, with screw caps, I mean, they're very easy to open, too, which is another thing. You don't have to grapple for a corkscrew. But one problem is that the wines can be, again, getting back to the sulfur, it can be a little bit closed. And so sometimes you need to decant a screw cap wine just to give it a little bit of air, because mm-hmm. when a wine is bottled with cork, it has a natural, very slow interchange with the oxygen. And so with the screw cap, it's completely sealed, and so it can't have that delicate interplay. So you might need to give it 15 minutes just to sort of open up a little bit.
Well, there's also the ritual. I mean, I sometimes am just flabbergasted. You go into a restaurant and you buy a bottle of wine for $18, which means probably retails for like $6, $7, or $8, right? And
right.
They take off the cork and they present the cork to you, and then you taste the wine and all that, and I'm thinking, come on, pour the wine, let's get on with this. You know? I mean, maybe if it's a $100 bottle of wine, but not. I usually just say, you know, come on, fill the glasses, lady.
Well, if it's closed with the cork, there may be a problem, and so it's worth taking a whiff.
I've never experienced that ever.
Okay, all right.
Well,
if you had, you would never forget it, I'll tell you, because it smells like moldy basement, sort of newspapers that have been made wet and stuck in a moldy basement for a while or something. And so, like dirty pool water, it's really an unforgettable smell once you smell it. And so you're lucky to have escaped it so far. But it does happen, and it's nice in the restaurant to give you the opportunity to reject the bottle based on that.
Tyler Coleman, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but is there any Michigan wines? I mean, there's a lot from the Leelanau Peninsula that I find pretty tasty. You familiar at all with ones from our state?
Unfortunately, I'm not that familiar with Michigan wines. I know there are some wines, but they tend to be kept in the local market. And
they do.
And in the Midwest, and that again gets back to wine politics and the subject of interstate shipping. And so it's hard for me here in New York to get access to those wines. So
let's do this just with a few minutes remaining, because we only have maybe about a minute and a half of the wine politics influenced by governments, environmentalists, mobsters, and critics. That's people like yourself and others. How do critics affect, for instance, what I would be drinking, or is it all mostly at the higher levels of consumption?
It's mostly wines at about $10 and up, I would say. But yeah, there's one critic, Robert Parker, who's tremendously influential. And so he's so influential that wineries, particularly higher-end wineries, have tried to craft their wines to appeal solely to his palate.
Huh.
And he likes big wines. And so the wines, as a result, have gotten bigger, more full-bodied, more robust over time. And so that's really the main influence in a nutshell.
Okay. Let's in about 30 seconds, if someone's listening and they said, boy, you know, the only thing I ever drink is white Zinfandel, which I would say forget totally, and they want to go to a wine store, how do they know what to do? There's wines there for $5. There's wines there for $50. And will the guys in the wine store give you a decent amount of advice?
Absolutely. If you go to a good specialty shop, I think that's really important to find a good shop near you where you can establish a good relationship with one of the clerks and tell them what you like and what you didn't like. And then that person will be able to help you make better selections going forward.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us. By the way, the book is terrific, Wine Politics, How Governments, Environmentalists, Mobsters, and Critics Influence the Wines We Drink. It's published by the University of California Press. And our guest, Tyler Coleman, also has an award-winning website. It's Dr. Vino. It's D-R-V-I-N-O, drvino.com. And I'll also have a link on my website as well, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E. Tyler Coleman, thanks for joining me on the broadcast.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIN. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit. It's a WRIF Motor City Riffs local music showcase at New York, New York in Chesterfield. It all happens this Saturday night with WRIF's Jack of Rock, Doug Bodell, with Detroit's own The Orbitsons live on stage. Always the best local rock of the team. The Motor City Riffs local music showcase at New York, New York, inside the Premier Entertainment Complex, 23 miles, just 2 miles east of I-94 in Chesterfield, with 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.
Hi, this is Mike Kay, the health insurance giant. Whether you're single, a family, small business, self-employed, or on COBRA, Health Insurance Giant is dedicated to providing quality coverage at affordable prices. For several years now, I have been advertising on WRIF and have achieved incredible results. I always know when my commercials are running because I get immediate phone calls and traffic to my website, healthinsurancegiant.com. Calls from the RIF always turn into a quick turnaround meeting with the customer. Once we review their health insurance needs, most of these turn into satisfied, long-term relationships. From the entire staff to the phenomenal lineup of on-air personalities to my rep, Katie, the team at RIF is always readily available with fresh ideas for my commercials that keep the results coming. WRIF has had a strong impact on the growth of my business, and I'm looking forward to advertising on the RIF for many years to come.
Hi, I'm Katie Devereaux from WRIF Sales. RIF doesn't just rock, RIF works for your business. Call me today at 248-591-6836.
Thank you, and we're back. You know, when it comes to fighting crime, he's never going to roll over. He's McGruff the Crime Dog.
Roll over. You're okay, Joy.
Thanks.
And I got two words to make your neighborhood safer.
Uh-huh.
Coffee cake.
Ah, the old poison coffee cake trick. The crook takes a bite, falls down to the ground.
Oh, it's for your neighbors.
You want to poison your neighbors?
No, never.
Oh, thank goodness.
No, for 25 years, I've been given tips about preventing crime. One of them is to invite people over for a cup of coffee and share the problems you see on your street and what to do about them.
That's great.
You can invite your local police officer to help, too.
I come to your doghouse for coffee cake in a safer neighborhood.
You can cut down on crime by not just locking your door, but opening up to your neighbors.
Still, a 10-pound bundt cake dropped on a bad guy's foot could help.
It couldn't hurt. And go on to weprevent.org for other tips. Could help too.
A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, Crime Prevention Coalition of America, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
My heart beats like